Welcome to the Cedar Hills, Utah Planning Commission meeting dated Tuesday, April 26. It's currently 7:01 p.m. And first order of business is public comment. Is there anybody here for public comment? All right, we'll move on to the public hearing portion of the meeting. Is there anybody here for the public hearing portion of the meeting? Have a motion to close the public hearing?
I move we close the public hearing portion of the meeting.
Second.
All right, very good. Before we go into scheduled items.
Do we have to vote on it?
Oh, yes, vote. That's what I was trying to say. So, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. So, tonight, see, we have all of our regular commissioners here. So, Jared, you'll be an alternate tonight?
Understood.
So, please chime in. I wanted to ask, is there anybody here for item number 7 on the agenda, the Johnson property?
Are you here for that?
Are you here for that?
Yes.
Okay. Can I hear a motion to move item number 7 up to the first scheduled item, 4.3?
So moved.
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All right. Thank you. So, so the next scheduled item then is review action on conceptual plans to subdivide the Johnson property located at 9220 North, 3635 West in the R1 15,000 residential zone.
Correct. Some of you may recall that this property was presented to the city or the Planning Commission last year in the form of Ben Euler. At that time wanted to subdivide these two properties or conjoin them. What happened was it got hung up because this zone was the R1 20,000 zone. So there needed to be a 20,000 square feet or about a half an acre. The city went through the process of changing some of these lots to the R1 15,000 zone because most of these lots are 15,000 or a third of an acre. So we went through that process and Mr. Johnson is one of the property owners. I've never met you. Are you Mr. Johnson? I think I have met you. Yes, I have. Okay. So what he's planning, what he's proposing to do, and you can see in your packet, is to take, and he illustrated it very nicely in his concept plan, which I appreciate. On that first page, you see lot A and B, and you can see their current state. Lot A is 0.165 of an acre, and lot B is 0.4545 of an acre. What he's proposing to do is to take a portion of lot B and create a new lot which meets the 15,000 square foot threshold. This would fit in with some of what the original plats had for this area. There was some errors in recording the plats. So if you look at the plats, there's some overlap where the descriptions overlap each other, and this is where we ended up with some of these weird shaped parcels that aren't buildable. So this would really correct that error from, I want to say it was probably 30 years ago that the error happened. It was back in, I want to say it was back in when this was in county days, under the county's jurisdiction. So we want to clean that up. There is a nice spot there. The utilities are all stubbed there. So what this is we're not approving any building. We're not approving anything other than the concept plan. What we're doing tonight is approving, saying we approve of your design. We approve of your plan. Move forward to the preliminary stage. Get the engineering and anything else that the city would require of you. So are there any questions on this lot?
I have one question. On the existing lot A.
Yeah.
What is there a structure there or is
no.
there something finished? There's what is the no. large square?
Yeah,
the basketball concrete.
Court. It's a concrete pad.
Oh, okay.
And are those garden boxes right there?
Yeah, I think there are some garden boxes. So there's no structures on either portion of the parcel. As you drive by, if you were to drive by, it looks like an empty lot. So
I drove by and looked at the property and had a couple observations. So part of our role at Planning Commission is to make sure that when things are put forth to the city that they're done properly according to city code and such. So I just noticed that on the existing vacant land, there's a few things that are contrary to the nuisance ordinances in our city. There's piles of pruned branches and trees. There's a couple of trailers sitting there. There's some trash, things of that nature. There's weeds that are higher than 6 inches, things of that nature, sagebrush. I would like to see it, you know, kind of cleaned up a little bit during the process. I'm sure you want to do that anyway if you're going to try and sell it. So that's just an observation I had. Also, on the west side, on the southwest corner, there's a water spigot there. And I'm presuming that the plumbing for that comes from the adjacent property. So if it's subdivided, that water spigot would be, you know, one person's land, yet the water comes from another person's land. So there might be something else to deal with.
That should be an easy fix to go off, cap that line, and run in. Because whoever the contractor is going to have to pull in utilities off the street for sanitary sewer, put PI, culinary water.
Anyway, just other than those observations, I didn't really see any issue with subdividing and moving forward. Any other comment or discussion? Hello.
Good afternoon.
So this is a motion item, right, Chandler?
Yes, this is an action item. And this is one of the few items that the Planning Commission actually takes action on, and it's not a recommendation. It's actually an action.
To approve the conceptual plans?
So it's to approve the conceptual plans. It doesn't go to the City Council after this. It comes back to the Planning Commission when the preliminary plans are drafted. So.
Okay. Ready?
Go
ahead, Larry. You look like you were ready. I move that we approve the conceptual plan to subdivide the Johnson property located at 9220 North, 3635 West in the R1 15,000 residential zone.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? Your vote then. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Pretty easy.
All right. You're welcome to stay and listen to the rest of our talk.
Super entertaining.
That is the easy part.
At some point.
What? There's a. Okay, you can unplug mine. I don't need it. No, I'm in the middle.
Well, of course we did move it up title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I'd like to welcome our visitors that are visiting us. We always welcome visitors. So welcome.
It's going to be very educational for you.
All right, so the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the March 31st, 2016 Special Planning Commission meeting. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
Be in touch.
I move that we approve the minutes of the March 31st, 2016 Special Planning Commission meeting.
Any second?
I'll second the motion.
All right, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the next item on our agenda and the subsequent items on the agenda, just want to have a brief discussion before we jump into it in regards that the focus of tonight's meeting should be on substance around code and policy and spelling and grammatical and just sentence structure. We've given Daniel a copy. I'm sure he'll take that into account when he presents it to the City Council, just for our sake of time, because there's a lot to cover here. So just want to make sure we kind of don't spend too much time on that. Unless the grammar structure is totally contrary and gives a totally different meaning and something different. So the next item is review recommendation on amendments to the general plan of the City of Cedar Hills.
Yes. What we're looking at tonight, the city's general plan, according to Utah State Code, is made up of at least three essential parts that are required to be in the general plan, those being the land use element, the transportation element, and the moderate income housing element. Tonight, we're looking at just the land use element and the economic element, which comes from the city's old general plan, which you can have extra elements if you'd like. So we're looking at those two items. The first one I'd like to go through is the land use, so if you have that, please open that up to that. The changes that we made, I've met with council members of Paula. We tried to change, and I didn't catch all of them, change some towns to cities. We've grown in the time since this was looked at last time. And then in that first paragraph, there's a code reference, 10.9.302 to Utah State Code. That is no longer a valid reference. So went through and found the new corresponding reference, which is 10.9A.403, which just establishes the land use element as a required element and outlines what it is. The language that's in the general plan comes from Utah State Code. So are there any questions on those changes?
So this land use element document derived from where?
It's the original land use element from the city's general plan.
All right.
With amendments to it. Just bringing it up to date. It really, when I say it hasn't been looked at since I was in high school, that's how long it's been. So.
So the general plan committee didn't review this part of things, or?
It's been 3 years.
So the general plan committee, when they were meeting, did they?
What the general plan committee did was they didn't get down into the weeds this far. What they did was go through, establish the certain values for the community. A vision for the community. They went through and did a survey for the city, and we had like 750 responses. It was actually a really well responded survey. And then what we've done is we've taken kind of those ideas and incorporated them. They're really good direction for the city council during the process of updating the design requirements. In fact, there was nothing that came out of the survey that was surprising. You didn't look at any of the results of the survey and say, man, I didn't see that coming. It was very straightforward. It was what you would expect. And so we're not really changing any of the vision here tonight with the changes to the land use element. Like I said, the first change is updating the current Utah State Code reference, changing towns to cities because we're no longer a town. And then if you go over to there's a reference to the design guidelines. Those are no longer in play, as they're going to be a reference to city code, so that was struck. And then in Chapter 1, the establishment of the zones, the zones have changed quite a bit since the time this was looked at. There no longer is an R1 10,000 zone. It's now R1 11,000, as well as have been zones that have been established, such as R1 15,000, PR 2.2, PR 3.4. The agricultural zone is not to be found within the city, nor the city code, so that is struck. And then the real discussion was on the real reason we needed to do this tonight was in Chapter 1, Section 7, which is the Shopping Center 1, the SC1 zone. Because where the city currently has a moratorium on that piece, that moratorium expires on May 17th. So we wanted to make sure that the general plan reflected any of the changes that were made to the design requirements, which are now in city code. And as you can see under that section, I didn't make any changes to 7. I feel like the vision that was established at that time, and I met with council members of Paula, I didn't make any changes because I felt like that matched what is still currently the vision of the SC1 zone. And then I added in the townsite residential zone and then the public facilities zone. Any questions on that?
So how would you like our feedback sort of at the end of the process? You make a motion. I know last time you seemed like you were kind of taking notes throughout the process, and that's how you...
I'll be doing that again. It's just habit.
Again.
So, and let me go. Let me say one more thing. There's new language under each one of these zones that wasn't there before. I didn't make that language. That's coming from the code. Maybe stated in a different way, but it's the same stuff that's from the code. Mm-hmm. So I'm not establishing a vision that was staff's vision for this land. It was really just taken right from the code. I'm not forging any new thoughts or ideas here. I'm just totally plagiarizing. I'm going to come right out front and say that.
There's no hidden text in the
document. There's no hidden text. So really the focal point of the discussion really needs to be around the SC1 zone. So can we for the time being just talk about just Chapter 1, unless there's any discussion about matter in the previous portion of the document?
Yeah, can I suggest we just start with one introduction and just go through the thing?
Okay, let's do it.
May not have anything.
Okay.
I think the first substantive comment I saw here was in Section 2 by Craig. But I don't know if anybody else has anything in section one, introduction.
What was the comment, Craig?
I'm looking for it. Where are you in purpose of?
Purpose of land use entitlement element, land use element. You had a comment about an elimination of competition between public entities in attracting development. I think you wanted to add language there.
I just struck it.
Oh, you struck it.
I mean, that was just my, as I read through it, I was trying to figure out what the intent behind it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can go away.
I mean,
what I think is that at the time that this was drafted, Cedar Hills was surrounded by a lot of county land, unincorporated land. We no longer are. There's no unincorporated land around the city. So usually a lot of cities will, their annexation plans will overlap, or they'll both show a plan to annex the same territory. So there is a competition to gobble up that land, if you will. As of this point, there's nothing left to be annexed into Cedar Hills as far as unincorporated land. There's portions that can be boundary adjusted, but nothing to have an annexation plan. So I think that's what that language is discussing.
I just didn't see a need for it anymore, but yeah, that was just my thought.
Okay.
Any other comments on that section? The section three, key land use elements issues. I think the first substantive comment I saw here was from you, Lorianne, and number two, development guidance you had in long-term effects on Cedar Hills.
It was just a syntax then. It was just more like, you know, desires to make, will create, just like getting rid of that verb create and just will have. That's all.
All right. Which paragraph are you looking at?
It's the number two, and it's just like the development of land will create a long-term effect. I just said has a long-term effect, and I just got rid of the verb.
Okay. I'll go. Did you email those out, everyone? I don't know that I saw your change.
Yeah.
I'll just go through and read yours and take right from that.
And she said about an hour ago.
Yeah.
I didn't see it then.
In the first paragraph, I had a comment, but it's just it's a semantic one if you want to look at it.
Right.
Yeah, current and occurring at present in the same sentence.
Well, if it's small word syntax stuff like that, I will go through the emails and just incorporate that. So, any other changes, questions? Okay.
So the next section, and I apologize if I'm skipping over people. I'm just kind of going by what people sent in advance. But if you have something in these sections, speak up. So the next substantive comment I had in here was
almost chapter one.
Right before chapter one, there's a question by
question.
Dodge.
Levels of service.
Oh,
where is
that?
This
was just Appendix B, and I meant to check the general plan. I'm assuming it's in there.
There's some of it's in there. So, like for example, the parks and recreation element has certain levels of service per residence. There's a certain service required. Like every 5,000 residents, there's a soccer field or something. I don't know what the numbers are.
I'm assuming Appendix B was part of that.
There's some of the levels of service are there. Other levels of service, like road maintenance, are established in the public works in the building department. Or as far as sewer lined capacities, that's just evaluated on a development by development basis, adjusting for what the city needs. So if there's a need for an expansion of pipe, then we look at that or see if we can divert it somewhere else. Those are established.
Any other feedback in chapter one?
Are you in chapter one?
Hold on. We're still in chapter one, right?
We'll be wherever you want us to be.
I thought we were still talking prior to chapter one. Number four, and this might just be semantics, it might just be grammar, but the sentence seemed very awkward to me. The last sentence of number four reads, these areas such as steep slopes, floodplains, ridgelines, fault zones, and other areas containing geographic hazards should be avoided to the extent possible. That sentence in and of itself sounds like people should just not go there.
You want to add something about development?
Development in these areas.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that same kind of phrase occurs four or five times through this document.
They really wanted to emphasize it.
Or they really do.
it just keeps saying avoid those areas.
I would put geologic.
I'm sure there's a sign there. If you were to walk there right now, there's a sign that says avoid.
Well, they're not. None of those are geographic.
I like that change. That's good. Hazards.
Chandler, one other item. Geologic. Is geographic, should that be geologic? Is that really what we're talking about?
Just, yeah, it is. Good catch, geologist.
There's a big difference.
There is.
Geographic hazard is when Google Maps.
Exactly. On the wrong street.
Right.
Good catch. Okay.
Any other comments before chapter one?
No. I'd be the one, want to be the one splitting hairs.
All right. Chapter 1. Does anybody have any comments in Chapter 1?
I just wanted to make sure that the blue comments I submitted under R1 20,000, I was just trying to coordinate with what we had changed. You know, it says more rural-type uses than the R1 10,000, which
I need to change that.
You meant R1 11,000.
It needs to be R1. If it's just black text, no struck through, that's the original text. I just didn't catch that.
So the only reason I'm bringing it up, it's more than semantics. It's actually coordinating with the other two zones. I just wanted to make sure that you mean to reference both R1 11,000 and R1 15, which we created subsequent to.
Well, I think if you look at the original text, you're looking at two residential zones. You're looking at the R1 10,000 and the R1 20,000.
Right.
So it references the other.
Three.
And now there's H1, there's PR 2.2, 2.3. Sure. I mean, there's lots of different residential type of zones. So this is just language that
those defined by area. It's probably fine. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding correctly what you were doing.
So maybe rather than referencing a specific zone, we say then other. Than the other types of residential zones.
You could.
A blanket statement.
And I think that's all I had on. That's not semantic on chapter one. So.
Any other comments for chapter one?
What was up with 3 and 4?
I didn't get it done.
Okay.
So
what will they be?
If you look at your code book, the first section outlines the legislative intent. It's going to say what that says. So, So I'm going to open up to the 10.2.2. It's 3.2. Break your codebook. So I do. So that is. Let's go to 10.4G. It says, the first paragraph, legislative intent, 10.4G-1A. The PR 2.2 plan residential zone covers the portion of the city that is primarily suited for residential development, represented by commingling of single-family dwellings and parks, playgrounds, schools, churches, and other community facilities designed to serve the residents of the city. This zone is characterized by spacious lots of various sizes, uncrowded buildings, and quiet residential conditions favorable to the rearing of children. Owners and developers of property within this zone should bear in mind that primacy is given to residential development and maintain their property in recognition thereof. It's going to say something like that. I mean, I'm not establishing a new vision here. Where the vision's been established, I'm not going to deviate from that.
That's a good question. Because there's that idea.
Should we move on to chapter 2, or are people still chapter 1?
Jeff had some. Oh, wait. In 5.
Yeah, that was what I was talking about before. Oh, okay. I was just making sure it's coordinated. Right.
Okay. H. Then in H1.
Yeah.
What is that? It's now 6. Used to be 4.
Yeah.
Say it's geologic and.
Does it do it again?
Yeah. Steep slopes, wetlands, one of your floodplain, landslide, ridgeline, other features which could be detrimental to residential structures.
It also does that in 4.
You do a word search for.
I'll just change it.
Just change it.
I'm just going to find and replace. Okay, you got it. Okay. Any other changes to chapter 1? No. On chapter 2, when I sat down with Councilmember Zappala to look at this, if you were to read through the, you can see that the density calculations, the density idea, the vision of the various areas of what they're, how dense they are, was all struck through because, quite frankly, this document was written 20 plus years ago, and this isn't how the city panned out. It says the general, I mean, the first one is under one low density residential. It says the general density of the low density residential area would be 1 unit per acre. And it talks about how this is, you know, what the city wants. This isn't what we have.
How did that happen? I mean, how did our forefathers allow people to create a city that was against the general plan?
Well, honestly, this is where I think that the vision slipped is that this document didn't get revisited every few years.
I think
it's simple as that. The general plan really needs to be evaluated and revisited and reconstructed every 5 years at least, where you look at this and you say, okay, how are we doing with our vision? And quite frankly, this got picked up, I want to say, in like 2008, 2009, and it just kind of sputtered out, and nothing ever came about from it. So,
right. If I remember correctly, I thought there was a statement somewhere in here that said it should be reviewed annually.
Yes. It could be. I'm just saying, as a general practice, you should at least review it every 5 years.
There's a statement that says Planning Commission will review it annually.
I wondered if, and this is a little bit of a side topic, but I wondered if that was something we just wanted to schedule at the beginning of every year, or if it's going to come up anyway. Once a year, and so we don't need to schedule it.
Well, the thing is it doesn't come up. And we really need to talk about the general plan. You almost need to just put it on the agenda because unless somebody's coming to you saying, "Hey, there's something in the general plan that doesn't jive with what my proposal is," it's not going to come up.
Well, then my suggestion is
scheduled every January. It's on the agenda.
The January meeting.
I think that's a good plan.
It's on our agenda. Unless it came up in December because of some development and we've already looked through it.
But
putting it on the agenda is probably not a bad idea.
So in this chapter, I didn't really make any changes. I just struck out any time it discussed when it defined what density was, what low density was, what medium density was, what high density was. And that's something that we're going to have to revisit because as it is right now, that's not what it is. Our low density in the city, if you look at the lowest density in the city, it probably is about a third to a half of an acre. Past that, medium density is probably a quarter to a third. Higher density would probably be what the Cedars is, where you have, probably about 10,000 to, or what is it, probably about 8,000, 10,000 square foot lots. So this is just something the city planning commission and the city council, we need to rework that language, and I don't feel like it needs to be done tonight.
Okay.
So that's why I just struck it and didn't put anything else there.
As long as there's the caveat that we are going to do
it. Yes, absolutely.
We've seen how the lack of density controls.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We have sharp folks, good folks who can come in and recommend developments that may exceed what we ever thought possible in our community. So.
Agreed.
One comment I had on page 9, high density residential. It says high density housing is located throughout the community in areas suitable for single family residential development. Is that a true statement? We don't have high density housing available in single family residential zones, do we?
Mm-hmm.
Do we?
Well, what about just
by Deerfield, down by you?
That's what I was going to say. Is our highest density is zoned highest density, and that is the, I think it's the PR 3.4 zone.
But that's not throughout the community.
No, it's not throughout the community. So I'm okay striking that entire sentence.
Well, it seems to contradict the second paragraph.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It says located near main roads and commercial areas of the community.
Let's go ahead and strike.
Kind of like one or the other.
Let's go ahead and strike that out. Then I'm perfectly fine with that.
Or limit it to areas that are set aside for high density housing, not areas that are suitable for single family residential development. Either way, you decide what you.
I mean, what if you rather than strike the whole sentence, what if rather than use the word areas, you had is located in the community in zones suitable for high density single family sure. residential development. So I just rework that sentence.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they may or may not be located near main roads and commercial areas of the community, right? I mean, our commercial zone
everybody's located
doesn't
near
have
main
any
road.
High density residential.
No, nobody's that far away from a main road, are we?
Well, what's a main road? Right? What's the definition of main road, right? There's no definition of what a main road is, I guess.
Well, there like really is, though. Them, right? Yeah.
Well, you're talking about our two thorough
canyons. Yeah. For a city our size, our main roads are very small, granted. But, I mean, we have Cedar Hills Drive, Major Collector,
Canyon 46.
Canyon Harvey
46.
My point is is main roads defined someplace in our documents? Because we're all talking about, yeah, we know what
it is.
It just.
There's a Parks and Trails and Streets Master Plan, maybe in your zone code book. I don't know if you've gone through in that depth, but it shows the city's park system as well as the major arterial roads. So it's I've seen it. It's there, and if you want to see it, I'll email a copy of it to you if you want to see it.
Because I mean, is the main road the one up there by the townhomes?
No.
No. Okay.
Main roads would be the ones that everybody drives to where they collect all the cars and then divert them to really either 4800 or to Canyon Road.
It's not always located
near
Canyon.
I'm only bringing it up because if it's not definitive what a main road is, then some developers can say, this is a main road. Looks main to me. I'm going to apply for this one.
Yeah, if it's in front of your house,
any other
main
comments in chapter two?
One question, very high density residential. Do we really have any of that?
Yeah, I wonder about that.
Are we zoned anywhere for anything?
You know,
because I'm looking at multifamily units and stuff. We don't zone for that.
We really don't. I mean, we really don't. And this may be something that when we revisit this document, this is something where the city just the planning commission just says, you know what, we don't have this. We don't want it. Take it out. And then the highest is high density residential, and we establish that with its current levels.
I'm not opposed to taking it out.
Do you want to just strike it right now?
Yeah.
Okay, strike it right now.
It's not a popular topic around our city anyway.
It's an understatement.
Okay. So then once again, we're back to the commercial zone. The only changes here were adding the current SC1 zone and language that describes it in a very general term, as well as striking out the sentence that discusses commercial on Canyon Road. There's been, I've gotten direction from some council members that that's something they want to see out. So it's struck right now.
I would agree 100%. You go down to the bottom of Canyon and you're watching commercial creep right up Canyon's Road, not in Cedar Hills, but south of here.
Yeah.
In PG. And I don't think we want that change coming up in the canyons when we have a nice single-family residential core.
Well, this all came about from St. Andrews.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
Right now, St. Andrews, it's that piece where the old par 5 was on the golf course. It is zoned residential, and it's been master planned for 22 lots. They're not quite acre lots. They're probably about a quarter to a third. Maybe some of them are half, but part of that's steep.
But there was talk of putting a hotel in there.
But there's been talk of a hotel, bed and breakfast, things of that nature. But we got some feedback from some council members as well as some residents in that neighborhood that specifically said we do not want to see commercial there. And it's not zoned for it currently. So
So the next substantive comment I see is clear down here on goal number 4. I don't know if you want to skip ahead that far. People have comments.
Goal. There we go.
Down the bottom, page 11.
Goal 4. Oh, the contradiction.
That far or not. I think you have other items. Craig had a comment or question or observation.
Comment. Yep. Seems like the first policy is in direct conflict with the second policy.
I disagree.
Okay.
And here's why. The Planning Commission will not recommend approval for any development or zone change which is inconsistent with the general plan or land use element. So somebody comes to you with a development and you can see very clearly that they want very high residential development in a low density zone. Outright rejected. Now the second one is if they came to us and said, this is what we want to propose, we change the document, and it's something that's amenable to the city council and to the planning commission, we change the general plan, it goes through all the changes, so then when the actual development is before the planning commission, that's when it actually meets the intent of the general plan. That's the way I'm reading it. There's two different ways.
I would suggest changing that word will to may. May not recommend. I mean, there are other parts in the code that talk about the planning commission has some discretion with some things at times.
Yeah.
And
I agree with that change.
Will is always, right?
I mean, will is the equivalent of shall.
Right.
Where may, if the zone is found to be beneficial to the community, at that point the city council may approve the changes.
Is there a time limit on when this can be done? Because
it would just go through the same process that we're going through right now. So let's say I wanted to develop a hotel in the center of town, but it obviously doesn't allow for that. I'd come and I'd say, look, this is why it's great for your community, and if you bought what I'm selling, that's when you go through and change the general plan. At that point, then I start the subdivision approval. That's when I start going through and submitting my concept plan and my preliminary plans.
But that can be done after the application's made, but before it's approved.
No. The general plan would be changed, so then if it was changed, then it would fit in with the vision of the community. If the planning commission is not going to change it, if they're not going to change the general plan, at that point it's just rejected outright.
So that's why the second policy says prior to.
Prior to, yeah.
Okay.
But in the first one, it says it's not going to recommend approval for any zone change.
Right. So they're not going to. You're not going to pass that development on if it doesn't meet the requirements of the general plan.
I agree with development, but it says or zone change. I guess one of the problems is the word inconsistent. It's a very subjective term.
Planning commission will not recommend approval for any development.
Purposely vague.
Does not comply.
Out of compliance.
Zone change is the one there that I can see where you're coming from.
The development, I'm okay with that.
There's very tangible moments when the development is applied for and when it hits certain processes.
Sure.
A zone change, though, zone change would actually come about in the previous one. Because that's really what the developer would be asking for, is a zone change.
Before he applies.
Before he submits the development.
Yeah.
He's going to say, look, I know this is low-density housing. I want to make very high-density housing, so I want to submit to you a zone change.
Which you'd have to go through that.
Which you'd have to go through the whole process, at which point, so I would say maybe strike, if we struck out that zone change language, then it seems like it's more consistent.
I would agree.
Okay. Yeah, I do.
Okay, it's a good catch.
So,
Are you okay with the word inconsistent there?
Yeah, if zone change is gone.
Okay.
Because if we're changing a zone, there's a lot of people there's always people who oppose zone changes and say this is inconsistent with what we should be doing.
Yeah. Any other changes on the land use element?
No change, just a comment. It's in goal 2, first policy. That's where it indicates we shall review.
Let's do that.
Every year.
Now we're required to.
That's what that says, shall.
Okay. Look, we're doing it this year. Check.
Make it fun. Have a potluck or something.
Right.
Do we amend this or do we recommend this amendment?
Say that again.
It says here we amend it. Is that within our rights to amend it, or do we just recommend the city council?
I think you should recommend it to the city council.
Right.
Okay.
So I think that'd be good practice.
Take out the word amend there, then.
Or recommend.
Amend. Say recommend.
And recommend.
Amendments.
And policy number 2.
Recommend.
Amend.
Yeah. Recommend amendments.
All right. Any other comments on land use element document at all?
So what you're saying on goal 2?
Goal 2.
Policy, the second policy there?
Yeah.
We'll make necessary recommendations.
Is that amended?
Yeah, there you go.
No, first policy.
Recommend first amendments. Policy.
It says, and amend the land use.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Should we move on to the economic document?
It's here. Okay. The only change I made here was I struck out that reference to Utah State Code. Utah State Code may have required an economic development back in before 2006 when they made a lot of land use changes. They don't require it now. But we still have one. I'm just striking out the language that is following the Utah State Code. The other changes we made were, once again, towns to cities. And then there's references to an economic development committee, which does not exist. So I struck that out. So those are the only changes I made. Any changes that you see to me will be necessary?
Goal two policy, when it says demonstrate to the town council, that means city council.
Yeah, I have that. And goal two. Oh, okay. Got it.
I had one in I don't know, Roman numeral three.
Okay.
Key economic element issues. Attempt to create a self-sustaining, economically viable community. Unless we start planting a lot more gardens in this town, we're not going to be self-sustaining. I would probably just strike that.
Again, the auto manufacturing land is, business?
Yeah, we're going to build our own cars, farm our own food.
We're going to become Amish people.
Wait, does it really? Did I miss that?
Create a self-sustaining, economically viable community. I'd say we could say economically viable because we can all go to our jobs somewhere else and come and live here. But a bedroom community, I just don't see as.
I'm sorry, where are you
number
looking?
Three
key economic issues.
Three key economic issues.
All right.
Last thing.
Self-sustaining. You never have to leave the community once you come here. Got it. Agreed.
So you
shame
had
I missed that. Yeah. I'd have laughed. One.
Yeah. Goal number one down at the bottom, the second policy. I was just curious as to what we were trying to say there. The policy number one is about organizing a committee to explore economic development opportunities.
Oh, that's kind of an incomplete sentence there, isn't it?
Yeah, and commission a study of these opportunities. I get that. So the first thing we're going to do is study this. We strike out the second sentence, and then we create a second policy. Or not create, but we just kind of struck the second half of what are we going to do with that study of economic opportunities. Normally that then develops into an economic plan. I don't care how we do it.
I don't even know what studies we're going to do there, to be quite honest.
And I'm okay with the fact that what we're mostly trying to do tonight is reconcile the changes to SC with the other changes, and we're not as concerned about these things. But we will have to revisit this document and find if we're going to have an economic element to our general plan, we'll have to follow through with more than just an economic study. We'll need to actually create an economic development plan if that's something we want to do. Like you said early on, not every general plan has this element as a part of it. But if we're going to start that process, then it ought to bear fruit. We don't have to figure out how to do that tonight.
I would almost say for right now, strike out goal number one in its entirety. And come back with a language that does, because I mean, what study are they we looking at here?
And I didn't know the answer to that.
Because I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that either. I mean, if I'm from a city's staff standpoint, I'm looking at it saying, okay, how does this development benefit the city? And it really comes down to items like taxation, offering services to the community. Can we offer services to this development? You know, the developer itself are going to present any traffic study or.
Well, you go to Salt Lake City, their economic development plan, a lot of that, before I moved here, I studied their plan, and it was all about how to attract business.
Mm-hmm.
What businesses do we want to attract? Where would we like them to be? And what's the possible economic benefit to the city of Salt Lake?
And this is a city with thousands and thousands of acres of commercial land. We have 40.
Yeah.
So 20 of which are taken. So
does the commission favor just striking goal one then here? Is that what we want to do? Just for the sake of moving along here.
Yeah, we're going to revisit this in a year.
We'll bring it.
Yeah.
If you do keep it, I have the word may instead of will again. I like saying may instead of will. I do that throughout my whole career. May do something versus will. So instead of will organize a committee,
so might say may. Okay.
So they have the option of doing it. Not they don't have to.
Because the way it's written now.
Right.
The way it's written now, it's you have to do this.
So, do we want to keep goal one or not?
You could strike it because under Roman numeral two, purpose of the economic element, It just references the fact that at this time, we haven't done these studies. When we and up until we do these studies or decide to do these studies, we're simply going to continue encouraging economic development, which is what we've been doing all along.
Okay. So are we saying strike goal one?
Here's one reason why I would maybe leave it in. Okay. I've heard at least one developer say that it's not economically viable for that parcel.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Let's leave it in, change the word to may.
So you could almost have an in-house study, and maybe we hire a developer.
Can we strike the second policy then?
Then what is viable?
Right.
The second policy is an unfinished thought.
That's fine as long as it's permissible.
Strike that.
We can strike the second
policy. And Council Members, Paula has something to say.
Feels contrary to that.
Can I make a suggestion?
They keep advancing that.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I would suggest that you just strike the whole economic elements. It's not required. And then if you desire to do an economic study at some point, put that on Chandler's list of things to do, and let's get it.
I got lots of time.
I would say
I actually had this thought on my way in of incorporating a lot of this into the SC1 portion of the land use element, combining the two. Taking the needed portions of the economic element and putting it in the land use element under the SC1 zone.
Because it's not required by the state anymore.
It's not required by the state.
You're suggesting striking the entire economic element document altogether?
The whole thing.
I would suggest we keep it. Why put off tomorrow what one can do today? We just talked about it.
Well, why do tomorrow what you don't have to do ever?
Well, here's maybe why, just for discussion, just as we talked about. You know, we are trying to encourage development of our commercial zone, and there are differing opinions out there as to how viable our commercial zone is. And it's one way is to let developers come in and propose something to us. Another way is maybe to study it. I'm not trying to create work here, but maybe as a community we ought to be looking at our commercial zone and figuring out what is viable, why are they saying it's not viable, or what are they saying is viable, what's not viable. Are there things that we can do to make it more viable so that we can realize this vision that, frankly, has been a part of the community for a long time, but for a long time we haven't been able to make it.
Let me ask you this then, because I agree with what you're saying to the T. However, the economic element has been here for 20 years and nobody's looked at it. So maybe it's the right words in the wrong place. Maybe it doesn't belong in the general plan. Maybe the language needs to be in the design requirement portion of the code where the developers, because if a developer comes, they're going to look at it and say, I read your code, I went through your code, and here's my development proposal. So what if the language is there?
Wherever we put it, what I don't want to do is lose this notion that maybe we ought to be studying ourselves what, like, again, going back to Salt Lake City, which you're right, is a giant compared to us, but they've studied how do we develop Salt Lake? And they're out ahead of the developers, and the developers, when they come in, they read not only what are the requirements in the SC1 zone, there's an economic element to that that may suggest what we think is viable, what our studies have shown is viable. Some of this, I'll admit, is thinking out loud.
Yeah.
By leaving it in and saying the word may, and we're not forced to do it anyway, it's just a start, right? You want to put it as code, then you can go that direction. That'll see you using it just to get it all together.
I don't think we're breaking any new ground here either, though. If you look through the three key economic element issues, neighborhood compatibility is addressed quite thoroughly in the design requirements. Type and amount of commercial development wasn't actually addressed prior to, but it is now. There is now density calculations on residential development in the commercial zone, as well as types of commercial development. And three, the creation of aesthetically pleasing commercial development. I think that's been established in the city.
But I wouldn't argue against that. I think the only thing that seems unique to this document and may not have to reside in this document is the notion of an economic study of our community, in particular viable development of our commercial zone, other than just, you know, a zoning code.
Right.
Something
okay.
More. And maybe
I see both sides on this, really. I really do.
So I would suggest if somebody doesn't want this in the document, they would make include that in their motion, which I would love to entertain at some point, since we spent 40,
you know,
15 minutes on one document.
Certain discussion. Excuse me for interrupting, but I can't stand it any longer. Quite a long time. We have had several ad hoc discussions of the viability of that particular zone that you're talking about. To ignore that is absurd, because it actually happened. Some people who have been opposed to some of the projects in there tend to overlook that. But if this forces a formal documentation of those ad hoc results, then we ought to do it. If it forces that to happen, then do it. If it doesn't, then strike it. But I'm really concerned that we'll continue to talk as if nothing has ever happened out there. And that's not true. I was there, I participated in those discussions, and I was as anxious then as I am now. Sorry. I apologize.
You're okay.
I probably did it for the night.
So we want to discuss this more. Does anybody have a motion they'd like to make?
Did we make a motion on the last section?
No, this is all one.
All motion. One discussion. I don't have my agenda right now. I have my agenda. I don't know. Maybe we put an economic element into the SC1.
I'm happy to bring this back and discuss this next month. There's not a.
Is there any reason why we can't have it both in the SC1 document and leave it as may here?
So that you can do that. The problem is when you double up. Yeah. In places like that, you change one and you don't change the other.
I see.
So then that's when you start getting your inconsistencies in code. So you try to just have it in one place.
But if we move it to the other, the SC1 discussion, we don't lose anything.
Right. We don't.
We can keep everything.
And we actually look at that occasionally, whereas obviously we never look at this.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting we have to keep this. I'm saying let's not lose the part that talks about an economic study.
Well, what if rather than having its own element, it was incorporated into key land use element issues where you have a distinct community character, infill development, yada, yada, yada. Number 10 could be economic development.
Where are you looking?
In land use.
The first document.
So we take the language out from here, incorporate it into there.
I don't think this body cares where it resides. I think we just...
That it resides?
I think you're right. Yes. That the other items are already really well covered in a lot of our new documents. I think, again, to me, the unique element that we at least want to extract out of here is this economic study.
Well, what about putting it as number 10 underneath financing capital facilities?
That's in line use.
The fewer the documents, the better,
in my opinion. I don't mind that either.
Do I hear a motion yet?
Do we do a motion on that?
Well, do we do a motion on each one of these items, right? I mean, each one's a review recommendation on its own.
Yeah.
So we will finish this agenda item with a motion and a vote, and then we'll move on to the next item.
Yeah.
So we'll give words to the effect that we accept the land use document with the changes discussed this evening, and part of the motion would be to delete the economic element, but take language from the economic element that deals specifically with an economic study of our community and move that to the land use element, item number 10.
Yes.
Under Roman numeral 3 of the land use element.
In front of that, good.
Yeah. If you just said ice move, it would be done.
I'll spitball for just a minute.
Do I hear a motion?
Now, do you want to say that this? I just want to clarify one thing we've discussed. Are we discussing this, that the city shall or the city may do an economic development study?
May.
May.
I think May. Okay. I think maybe we're starting to slowly get to a point where we think it's a good idea.
Okay. I think I agree with Don that there is a lot of information that the city has on economic development in the SC1 zone. I don't know that it's ever been formalized into one document or one study. There's been commissions done. There's been blue ribbon committees. There's been a lot of these things that the city's done. But as far as a formal study where the city's contracted out to a certain group to gather information, for as a project as a whole, I've never seen anything like that. But there is information out there. So maybe that's where we start.
The city paid for a small study, not a comprehensive study.
The only thing I've seen that's came close to a study is what the Hubble Group presented as part as the design guidelines. That's what they did. That's what they did was that. So, but I mean that wasn't the study such as. You know, within 5-minute radius, you have X amount of rooftops. In 10 minutes, you have this. I think that's something that the city probably needs to consider as a selling point, but no.
I don't think there's an option. I think city has to do that.
Yeah. So maybe we go back and look at what we did.
So do we have a motion yet? Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll try. So I move that we accept the land use element with the changes discussed this evening, that we delete the economic element from the general plan with the exception of moving the language in the economic element that deals with an economic study of our community over to the land use element in under Roman numeral
chapter 1.
Three.
Chapter 1.
Is it chapter 1?
No. Yeah.
It's still in the introduction.
The last under, thing before.
Under the introduction, Roman numeral 3, added as item 10 under Roman numeral 3. Now, and just as a caveat to that, we'll still have to define exactly what that language is we're moving over to the land use element, and maybe that's something you can propose to us, Chandler.
Yeah.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Do you want to discuss that, Chandler, before we?
Yeah. Just real quick. I don't think that where we don't have any hard fast language tonight. I'm not too concerned about not having that tonight either. I think that's something that we can even revisit next month. So, but I think by the end of May we can have a paragraph ready to insert there.
So let's have a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Next item on the agenda is review recommendation on amendments to the city code, Title 10, Chapter 6, related to the planned commercial development projects.
I know you guys have had a number of occasions to look at this document. I'm just going to open it right up to questions, comments.
This is the one that's called Revised Title 10. Right.
One item of note is that throughout the document, you see it's referenced as 10.4E-1. I think, Daniel, do you have new copies of it?
Yeah, so I have a new copy that references 10.6A.
Is the language the same otherwise?
Nearly the same except the first couple paragraphs, which I can explain why those are not different. But everything else is the same. It does incorporate all the minor wording changes you guys sent to me.
6A.
So this document, this body has seen several times and provided input in previous meetings. I think we may be close to consensus potentially, but more than welcome to spend the time necessary on this document. Did you want to present anything, Chandler, or do you?
No, I want to open it right up to discussion. Okay. I don't think I'm going to say anything new here.
So my first comment is in permitted and conditional uses, but I don't think anyone else has anything prior to that.
We're putting this 10.6. Large scale.
And my thought, there's a sentence there that says that uses listed in the land use code numbers document that are not listed in the table below are prohibited. I just thought, just to be succinct and such, would be to give this table maybe a title and reference the title of the table here, because there's several of the tables technically below, right?
Yeah.
This, I know it's referencing the immediate table right after this, but it might be, we might want to give it a title to this table and reference it there.
Can I see someone's code book?
Real quick, how do we reference
the
tables in the code book?
That's what I want to see.
This paragraph's changing a bit, isn't it?
We don't.
So it's replacing this.
Okay. We really don't have a system that I can see of how we reference tables in the code book.
So this is what this is. Replace this.
Well, anyway, just so you know, this might just be semantics, but I just think that this would be obviously clear that that's the table we're referring to.
Can we give it a title?
Thank you, Ken. Yeah.
So
I just was, if there was a way that the city already did it, I wanted to be consistent with that. Sure. I don't see that.
We just call permitted land use code numbers. So, for example, just one suggestion for title.
Before we get into that, David, just a clarification.
Mm-hmm.
We're proposing to replace Article A, the current, with this.
Completely.
Okay, so this is a replacement for this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And 4E references that, right? That's a question, yeah. How do we get there?
To 6A?
Yeah, does 4E reference 6A?
Go to 6.
Yes, it does.
Well, I know.
Is it?
That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
Because a developer is going to go to SC1, which is very short, always has been, and in the past, then they go to the design guidelines.
So 10.4E2 says here's what's allowed in the SC1 zone.
Okay.
And it says agriculture and production of crops in the field, because there is an existing field there.
Yes.
And then it says planned commercial development projects subject to the provisions of Chapter 6, Title A of this title.
Okay, good. So then that gets us to 6A, guidelines are now incorporated into 6A.
It makes it codifies the design requirements and puts them into 10.6A,
which is something we've been talking about for a while. Yeah.
I think it's something that's long overdue for the city.
Yeah, good. Okay. Sorry.
You're fine.
I don't understand how we get there.
I was jumping again. I had another comment that Daniel's heard from me once before, and maybe it's not a valid concern that I have. I'm looking for suggestions. So in that permitted and conditional use, there's a sentence there that says, regardless of the entries in the table, all uses for land within 100 feet of residential uses in this zone or in adjoining zones shall be conditional. So I understand the intent there, and that is that we'll make anything that abuts within 100 feet of residential use becomes conditional regardless of what's in the table. I understand that. My concern, and I couldn't find it in the code, is there, my concern is there's like 600 feet of commercial space along that front.
You're talking about the city's 9 acres, the depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 600.
And so if we had a developer who purchased that property from us and opted to develop, you know, 599 feet of it and left 101 feet to the neighborhood, our intended to develop that, right? They're kind of off the hook for any type of conditional use because their use doesn't come within 100 feet.
Right. So let's play with this scenario. That would be, let's say it's a permitted use in that zone. It would be permitted.
Right.
But they would still be required to do something with that 100 feet.
That's my question. I couldn't find the code where they're required to do something with that 100 feet.
It's not referenced in the code, but I mean, when they submit their plan, they're going to submit a landscape plan as well. They're going to submit a roadway plan.
Right.
There's going to be something back there because the city's not going to say, okay, well, let's subdivide this parcel so that there's a 100-foot strip back there that's completely trash.
Right.
So
it does discuss that in here about the development is 10 acres or an entire parcel. Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, that's all covered. I think that's all right. Covered pretty well.
So they're going to have to plant something on that land, right. Whether it's green space, loading dock, whatever it is, they're going to have to plant something for it. And depending on what they use it for is when the conditions come in.
I don't know if I can find it right quick, but it does talk about 10-acre minimum or entire parcel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to make sure you're protected from this scenario that I'm probably will never happen, right?
Right. I agree, though. We don't want to create any residual parcel that just becomes a spite strip or just some garbage parcel that collects trash.
Right. Yeah, and that language regarding the 10 acres, that's already in our code in 10.6a, and so this was just copied over.
Yeah, I thought that was just taken straight over, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, Chairman Dodge, you had a comment in the table. You just changed some language on 1122. I think the language that's there now is straight from the land use code, I'm guessing. You wanted to, you're suggesting a tweak there.
Sorry, I missed the reference. Where are we at?
In the table.
I can explain that.
1122, yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that today. So the wording change was 1122. It currently says two-family dwelling duplex attached to one or more duplexes. And the change was suggesting to only one other.
Right.
And
I didn't want to have duplex.
Right.
Just a flaw.
This language comes from the land use codes document, which has exactly US, that language there. And it's basically saying this is a generic use. And the way we constrain that we don't want building after building and we only want two joined together is in the requirements for residential uses. So later on it says, and I actually added a sentence there after you pointed that out today. So in the requirements for residential uses, where it talks about, this is 10.6a, 6a3.
10.6a what?
10.6a, 6a3. Yeah, I wish I had the page.
6A.
So it's 10.6A6 and then A3. So it says allowed residential density shall be 8 units per acre with no more than 4 units per building. And this is the sentence I added. For this requirement, attached structures are considered part of the same building. So that way you really only can have 4 total units together in one structure.
Good.
And is attached meaning that our garage shares a wall with the next unit, or that they can share walls?
You're finding them.
Just attached in any way.
Just okay. Names right.
Oh, okay. Did you find it?
Just sitting right here?
Yep. 6A6. Okay. Yeah, we're way back.
So, Daniel, you added a sentence there that says this requirement does not apply to uses that are mixed with residential on the second floor above commercial on the ground floor. That's at 100
yes, foot. That was pointed out by our legal review, who said if you say everything's conditional within 100 foot of a residential use, then the minute somebody puts in a residential use on the second story, the commercial on the ground floor becomes a conditional use. That was not what we intended.
Yeah. All right. Is that from Chris Bramhall?
That was Chris Bramhall, yeah.
Oh, look, so backing up to that point, so how does that correlate to this 100-foot limitation? How do we make those two not be in conflict? If you have residential on second story of a commercial building, it's now residential, it's automatically conditional. Based upon 10.6A3.
I think you might have to cite adjacent to single family zone.
Yeah, we're going to have to change the wording there because.
Yes, this needs to somehow be.
We have
clarified, yeah.
Yeah.
If you change that 100 feet of
single family dwelling.
Residential zone.
I mean, the intent there was there might be. In the in the mixed use district, there might be somebody who builds townhomes Because the way this is written is we would allow you to do townhomes as long as you're also doing commercial at the same time. Sure. It's 50-50, right? So somebody builds townhomes, we want anything within 100 feet of those townhomes to be a conditional use, was the idea.
And I agree with that. I mean, that's great. But the way it's written,
yes,
we have to fix it.
Yes,
we have to clarify.
Fix it to make it say that.
Yes.
So see, changing it to single family is a step in that direction. I don't know if it solves the entire problem, but it helps, I think. All right.
Or you can put an exception statement in it. You know, except as residences are attached to commercial structures. Mm-hmm.
So I think what that second sentence there that I added needs to be struck and rewritten as an exception is provided for commercial uses that are directly attached to a residential use.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So any comments up until the table of the uses? I have some comments about the table. Is there any other comments up to the table itself?
The 100 feet, I'm still
struggling with that.
Yeah. See, I mean, I thought the intent was that with 100 feet of residential use in adjacent zones is kind of how I read it. That's what I read as the intent. But now Daniel's saying that if someone builds townhouses, then everything becomes conditional within 100 feet of the townhouses.
And if that's not what you want, we should discuss that.
I think if you're building townhouses in the commercial district, then you know what we've got in the table, you can have to live with. Does that make sense? I mean, because they're not there now, so we're not. This isn't going to change anything.
If it's in the commercials, you could say that if it's in the commercial zone, this doesn't apply.
Well,
if it's adjacent to a residential,
suggesting is just to change to say all uses for land within 100 feet of residential uses in an adjacent zone.
In the adjacent, yeah. Yes.
And not worry about any residential uses within the commercial zone.
No, it's the commercial zone. I think if you're buying a townhouse in the middle of a commercial zone,
you're going to have
businesses around you, and I don't think
that's not the intent.
I agree with that. I mean, we're probably talking about something that may or may not happen, but I thought what this means is to protect the adjacent
single family homes.
Well, that was the focus of the sentence.
Yeah, and I'm not so concerned.
So maybe we should just then take a poll of the Planning Commission and say, does everybody agree with that? If we do, then let's just go forward with that interpretation.
I agree with that.
I think Jeff's worrying about it. Or John.
Jared and I were just talking. And this is semantics. This is wording. Okay. All uses for land within 100 feet of residential uses in this zone. The adjacent are not in that zone.
Yeah. Or in
so that has to change.
Or in adjoining zones.
You just strike in this zone. Within 100 feet of residential uses in adjoining zones, shall be
commercial. If you buy a condo or a townhouse in a commercial home, I'm kind of getting that feeling.
Craig's saying, and I agree with that too.
We're not fooling anyone. They're buying in a commercial zone.
Yeah. You can just strike the in this zone and say in adjoining zones shall be conditional.
That simplifies things.
Okay.
The power of many great brains at work.
Such a little brains. Yeah. Big brains.
Many little brains.
Oh, yeah, one more of us. Any other comments before the table? So, in the table, I don't know what the body feels, but I changed and I wanted to change in the office zone in the 1292 and 1293, the disabled assisted living facility and senior housing congregate care to be conditional in the office zone, primarily because that activity already occurs in that zone. And if for some reason the Charles Center, for example, wanted to sell a property and somebody else had to apply for a conditional use to continue to be a senior housing or assisted living facility, it wouldn't be permitted there.
No, it would, because that's what the E means.
is the exception.
That's what
exception.
The E means.
Yeah.
I'm talking about 1292, disabled assisted living facility.
Oh, you're saying converting it from
senior housing.
So if they wanted to convert this current Charleston into.
Yeah, which would be easily adoptable business model, I would think, for the most part. So I suggest that we just make it conditional versus not allowed at all. It was one suggestion I had. I don't know what the body feels about that.
My worry when I was drafting that is, what if somebody comes in 10 years from now and says, you know what, the dental offices are just not hacking it here. I want to rip that down and convert that into a big senior housing facility.
Well, and I think we talked about this before, right? If it wasn't cutting it, it'd be a vacant building, and it'd be better to have the tenant there for the building than if it's a bad business model gone south. It's better to have a new business model there.
I guess I'm not following. 1292 and 93 are already conditional in the office.
They're in the mixed use, not the office.
Yeah.
I added those seats.
Oh, those I can't tell comments. Those were added.
Yeah, turn your
shows up track change.
On.
Yeah, see.
I added those. Right now they're blank.
See, they're on mine. It shows up as his edits.
Okay, I didn't write it.
Just do show markup right there. His balloons or whatever. Right there. Show
I think I agree with David.
For some reason, it's still not showing.
Well, so those are some suggestions. If no one's opposed strongly one way or another, we'll move on for sake of time.
Do you have a problem with them being conditional? Make change on this condition.
I think if you do that, you have to put some kind of density restrictions on it, because right now we have density restrictions on the other things.
Would that be the conditional use? And we make it a C?
I would.
No, it doesn't. No? That does not automatically come with a density restriction.
My concern with density being only a condition that we bring up at the microphone is it can sound arbitrary or capricious. I'd rather we have teeth in this, which I think is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, you can't. We don't have a standard that says you have to have right. A certain level of density.
And I would rather, if we're going, because we've already run into this, where someone can come in and basically develop as many units as they want, if we don't set a density standard, because believe me, those units can get very small, and you can cram them in.
Yeah, so right now the density restriction in the document as it's drafted is 8 units per acre, and that's how many total acres for Lexington Heights development. Was that 4 acres or so?
5
acres.
So yeah, you're not looking at anything. If it's 2, then you're not looking at anything larger than what we would allow in a half-acre lot in a residential zone.
Okay.
Because you could turn a half-acre lot or just a single-family residential
into a small assisted living, and that's we max 16 beds on a much smaller piece of ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then. We'll
so maybe we're covered there with the density as it's already written.
So I don't think anyone's opposed to making those two uses conditional.
It's a little over 2.
Provided
including the Charleston?
Not including the Charleston.
Okay. Scale of the development. And it sounds like we do.
I had one other. I just have another change. I just put portrait photography as a conditional use in the. The neighborhood, I mean the retail zone, I can be talked out of it quite easily. However, I just thought it was kind of odd that we, this is like a business that we pick on the portrait photography people, right?
Wait, say that again. 6221.
Yeah, the 6221 portrait photography, making it conditional in the retail zone.
In the retail zone. Oh, so the reason for that not being present was that the retail zone says that we're supposed to have sales tax generating businesses.
And it's a service, so there's no.
And that's a service business.
It's like a bank.
There you go.
They don't have sales tax when they sell their pictures? I mean,
like not, it's not primarily a sales tax generating business.
It's not a high density traffic business. All right, I got talked out of it. Let's move on.
That was hard.
Like I said, I could be talked out of it. Are there any additional comments on the table? I presume not. I'll just take the next available comment anybody wants to have throughout the rest of the document.
Just following the table, you go into site requirements, and that kind of covers what we were talking about earlier. Under A, area, each proposed development shall contain initial size of 10 contiguous acres, which shall be considered a minimum amount necessary to complete a logical design area, provided, however, the blah, blah, blah. Lots, non-conforming lots of record containing less than 10 acres, the minimum initial site size shall be the entire parcel.
Do we want to change that to be conforming lots of record? I don't know that there are any non-conforming lots down there.
How about just lots of record?
Lots of record, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how it would be non-conforming and not have a building on it down there.
You know, your zoning map on the website still shows the Jacob Properties County. So.
Lots. I know there's lots to do.
Okay. Just something to put on the list.
We'll have to pay Bowen and Collins to make us a new map.
I have a comment clear down on page 12 if we want to go that far.
And then I think number two kind of covers all bit because there's more bits too in that. Same thing. Subsequent additions to the site area containing less than the amount set forth may be permitted upon a determination the area to be added constitutes a logical extension of the initial site plan. Yeah. I think that covers your 101-foot strip.
I'll sleep better now.
I was worried about that.
I've been losing sleep for days.
I'm on page 8 of the comment. All
right, go ahead.
We're down to, I had just added under street lighting, and this may be covered somewhere else. I just want to make sure.
Where are you from?
So this is item D. It's on the 8th page of the document.
D, right under the shrubs and
right.
Yes.
Right before signs.
So I added under item number 1 where it talks about the lighting plan showing that the lighting levels diminish to 0-foot candles at the development's property lines.
Yes, that was on my list of things to just clarify with Chandler before I added
that?
It. He added a sentence on street lighting that says lighting levels shall diminish to 0-foot candles at the development's property lines. Is that standard practice?
That's pretty standard for what we've already been doing in the commercial zone.
Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to. If it was covered somewhere else.
That's true.
I'll put that in there.
Yeah. I thought that was somewhere else in the design guidelines, wasn't it?
I thought it was too.
In the design guidelines.
Because that's what we've been. That's what we've been enforcing.
Well, this is only
conditions.
For street lighting. So
street lighting.
That may be right.
That may be it. Yeah. I swear it was already in there.
Number 5, if you moved your sentence to number 5, I think you'd be okay in that same list of items.
Yeah.
We use in all areas of this development. Okay.
And then just put lighting levels shall diminish to 0-foot candles at the development property line.
Okay. That makes sense.
Does that make sense, Chandler?
Yeah. Daniel, you're...
We don't want any of those cobra heads around here.
Only one other comment. We use the phrase dark sky lighting fixtures. I'm not used to that phrase. I'm used to the phrase cutoff fixtures, meaning when you look at a fixture, you can't see the actual lamp.
Dark sky are for to prevent
light pollution. We have recommended in some of our meetings that the developer use only cutoff fixtures. Lighting manufacturers are making even the acorn style fixtures as cutoffs where the actual lamp or bulb is up in the housing so that you're not.
Does it project the light down?
Yeah, you've got.
Because that's the idea.
Yeah.
Most LED lighting now is directional lighting, anyways. You're not going to get light pollution off of the majority of stuff that they're selling now.
You're saying you don't have to go to a cutoff in order to accomplish
this? No, not necessarily. And all of the street lighting it's pretty much standard practice now to go to LEDs on street lighting, that kind of thing. You can buy other stuff, but there's not a lot of it. And that doesn't, there's pretty much an edge where the lighting is. There's not this glow like you used to get.
Yeah, I mean, you could literally see the burst of the
lamp. Does the second half of that sentence kind of cover what you're talking about?
Shields covers.
Well, it does. Those things have to be added.
Can you say
the way it's been in the past is a neighbor comes forward and complains that they can see the lamp.
Right.
And then you add a cover. And the way developers have gotten around it very nicely over the last several 10, 15 years is just to go to all cutoff fixtures. You can't see the lamp. But what I'm hearing is that the newer LED fixtures are already there anyway due to the nature of their construction.
And also code is going to pretty much require LED lighting over the next few years. You're not going to be able to get
You're starting to see cities starting to have to move their streetlights to LED, and there's the incentive to do it from Rocky Mountain Power, too. So.
But to your point, I mean, this is going to become code, right? These are no longer just like, you know, guidelines. And when we say dark sky lighting, is that a technical term that is...
It's kind of a buzzword that won't make any sense to somebody.
See, I'm not even familiar with the buzzword.
Oh, that was a big deal.
What word should we use there instead of dark sky lighting fixtures? That would
If cutoff lighting is the industry term, I'd say use that, but I'm not in the industry.
Well, the cutoff describes an actual physical configuration of that light fixture, so I'm not sure that it's...
Should we just say lighting fixtures shall be used and don't just drop dark sky? Then just whatever lighting fixtures happen to be.
Lighting fixtures that were designed to prevent light pollution.
I mean, you could leave it in. You could leave it alone. You could just leave it alone.
Is dark sky going to become a term we're more familiar with?
I don't know. It was something that I was familiar with, so I thought other...
You gotta keep the mind of the age.
I haven't heard it very much, and I work for Rocky Mountain Power in their efficiency department, so I don't know.
I said we just put lighting fixtures shall be used. We don't want to age this document with a technical term that later
a buzzword.
Yeah. You know, 10 years from now they'll be wondering if we're talking about the force or something. You know, not knowing what dark sky meant.
Is that in here?
For example.
So do you want to take that out? What do you think we should say there?
Dark Skywalker.
I would just say directional lighting so that you're in
you know. So the directional
and then add
I like that.
Your line of 0-foot candles at the property.
It's the same thing. What do you think, Daniel?
I like directional lighting.
And then with the addition of the 0-foot candle the property line.
I added that in my notes to number one.
Right. I think what Craig was saying, and I agree with him, if you just take that and move it away from number one and put it under
five. Yeah, I've added it in number five.
Just reinforces
my copy.
It gives an actual measurable standard that,
right.
that we can look at their lighting.
You can quantify it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, moving along... I have outside storage and cells. Page 12 of the original document. There's a sentence in the middle of there. The city council shall be the land use authority for this permit. Is that how it's done today? Or I just wonder if we should put... is the planning commission...
Well, you'd have a crack at it. Usually what this is established in the development agreement. And the planning commission looks at the development agreement as well as the city council.
Right.
So the land use authority means the ultimate decision is made by.
Yeah.
But it doesn't
establish them as the only land use authority.
It doesn't say that the planning commission isn't going to review it.
You can have multiple land use authorities for various items.
Right. I'm just right now, is this a delegated authority from City Council to Planning Commission, or does City Council approve all outside storage and sales?
This would be consistent with current language that we have already established in development agreements.
I copied this basically from the Walmart and McDonald's and Chase agreements, and they all said this.
Yeah. So this would be consistent with what we've already established in development agreements.
As an aside, I intend to bring up Walmart later in the meeting.
I've already gone down there and spoken with them. I've tried to get a hold of them, just for the record.
I'll bet there's no one left there who ever talked to us.
When I brought up their stamped concrete, I thought they'd return my call.
I personally have no other comments on this document.
I had two comments, but they're in blue. They're just language. It was only meant to strengthen.
I think I already incorporated the.
And you may be good as you are, but I just wanted to strengthen what I knew you were trying to do there. I don't want someone picking it apart.
If you read them out to me, I'll tell you, because I did it today, so I'll remember if I...
So following requirements, in addition to those listed above, apply to
those 12. Yeah, put that in already.
Just a strength. Okay.
I have, for discussion's sake, on the 10 on residential use requirements, as Don pointed out, there's been a lot of... There's been things that have come to the into the city over the years for this property, and I think it needs to be noted that all of them have included a heavy residential component, and that's what the developers that were proposing developments claimed was necessary in order to make a viable development. As far as I can tell, this residential use requirement with the densities and stuff that are proposed in here would severely limit those types of developments, such as been proposed in the past. And that needs, I mean, I don't care one way or the other, but I'm just saying we've never seen anything for proposed for the, you know, the part of the SC1, the mixed use that's left, that did not include a heavy residential component.
In that part
Right.
So I think one of the things I tried to do to accommodate that, I was trying to strike a balance, because I've been hearing lots of comments from residents they don't want any residential in there. And so in that section, it does allow for standalone residential uses for the first time. We previously had said that all residential had to be second floor, and then there was what some considered the loophole for assisted living, which kind of led to the situation we're in right now. And so the way we crafted it was to strike a balance to say that the stuff on the southern half could be purely residential, and the stuff on the northern half should be commercial.
And so how many units then floor. Would you be looking at on the southern half based on the density?
That's a good question. We said 50 eight total. Per 50 acre,
50 total. 50 total. Mixed use was the
southern part of it. If I'm thinking, it's if I've got my directions straight, the southern part is probably the best residential or retail part of the property.
No, the southern is adjacent use. to the homes.
It's the mixed use. What about the piece that runs?
We're that's a different zone. That's the retail zone.
So it's limited to 50 total units within the mixed use district.
With the eight units per acre, I don't think using half of it, I don't think you can get 50. So
yeah, I don't think that's possible.
That mixed use is only
8 units per acre. Six,
how many acres total is the mix?
12. So that's 11 acres. And a half.
So you're 48. Okay.
So to me, again, going back to Salt Lake City, part of the reason they did their economic study was so they literally could market Salt Lake City to the rest of the country to attract business and so forth. We're making a bold move here, which I agree with, and I think it does reflect what our community wants. This notion of max 50 units, it doesn't align with what developers have been telling us, and I wonder if some of what we can do in the near future is to say, accepting these numbers, how do we make our commercial district look viable and attract developers in such a manner that aligns with what our community wants? Because I think this does align with what our community wants, but Craig's right, it's quite a difference.
I mean, are we condemning this property to be vacant for the next?
So Craig and I had a conversation earlier today about this, because this is a concern. And I know we brought this up before, was where there wasn't a density calculation on the property prior to this document, and now there is, are we in some way, shape, or form devaluing the property? Which I don't necessarily see it completely that way. State code allows a municipality to be the land use they can designate land, they can zone land, they can zone out land, they can zone out uses. In this case, the city has determined that that smart piece is commercial. And we're not reducing, I don't see it as we're even reducing density from previous, because there really wasn't anything established. It was really more nebulous before, where you did have developers present large developments. In fact, most of the calls I get on the smart property and most of the discussions I have on smart property revolve around a large residential component there, if not a primary residential component. So this does change it in that regard, but I do think that you have to remember that the city is the ultimate arbiter of land in the city. Like the city gets to say the rules by which the game is played.
See, from my perspective, having talked to former council members who presided over zoning decisions in that area, my perspective was that the zoning in that area was never intended to allow a significant residential component. It had assisted living added as a use because it was believed that it was mandatory that we had to list it in accordance with federal law. But it was really intended to be second story above commercial in that part of the zone. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, we're kind of moving towards the direction of being more accommodating than we ever have before in terms of permitting more density and explicit density for standalone residential in that zone where we never allowed it before.
Well, I thought we had allowed
perfectly
single family
open to having an economic study, and if an economic study came back and said, you know what, that's just not going to fly, no developer is going to touch that, you're zoning it to be vacant, I would totally reconsider and say that maybe we need to go farther.
Well, I don't oppose the direction we're going necessarily. I just think we need to acknowledge the fact that what we've seen in the past has been, I mean, you know, I've talked to develop my dad's a commercial developer, and you know they just laugh about that back part of that commercial zone because it's, you know, I mean it's not highly desirable.
Except Walmart's right across the street.
What's that?
Walmart's right
across the
street.
That's the problem. Yeah. When you talk to a lot of commercial people, that's the problem.
Walmart's like
who goes against Walmart? You know, there's certain places that like to be by the Walmarts, but they tend to like to be on the outlying paths, easy access, you know, fast like McDonald's and stuff. So the Walmart's not a big help to our commercial zone in some ways. In other ways,
yeah, I guess it demonstrates that commercial will go deep into the zone. And
well,
I mean, I'm perfectly open to having an economic study that tells me I'm wrong.
Maybe that's what we should do is look at it and see, like Jeff was saying, maybe we should put it out there and find out what is possible. I mean, what could go there? I don't know.
Well, and let me clarify. I'm not suggesting that we just do an objective study and find out what the experts say. What I'm saying is let's accept this as our guideline. Or one approach is to say let's accept this as our guideline. We're only going to develop 50 units of residential, and let's look at how we make this a sellable, viable development that complies with what our community really wants. I'm not saying bring in the guys from the outside to show us that we're wrong. I'm saying this is what we want, so let's look at this and figure out how we develop the overall commercial district accepting these guidelines in a way that we like, that our community feels is palatable, and in a way that becomes attractive to the right developers. I'm saying that's one approach that could support the change, this bold change, which I personally agree with, and not personally as a commissioner, also agree with that it reflects our community based on what we've heard from people at the mic.
And I agree with that. It's hard to go back though once we adopt these. I mean, if it does turn out that it's completely unviable, and the study comes back and says, yeah, good luck, then what do we do? You know, and I don't know. I know I got no answers.
If the owner gets to that point and has a viable argument, they can try to change the zone.
Yeah, they can always make an appeal to the city. You're right.
There's another approach. the owner is going to get, if he feels like you've just condemned his property, then you're going to have to deal with the
taking
the owner, buying the property, or dealing with the
My opinion is that we don't really know if we have the right math equation as far as density and units and so forth, but by allowing more creativity for residential use, not restricting it to the second floor, for example, and second floor residential models, the commercial on the bottom haven't been exactly highly successful in most cities. So by taking that off the table, then allowing them to be creative with, they could do the whole thing commercial if they wanted to with no residential, or they could do half of residential, and then they don't have to, they can be more creative with it. I think we've made it more palatable for them, but I don't know if we have the right math. I think time will tell, right? I mean, we don't know.
Right. That's,
you know, we don't have a crystal ball to know the answer to that. I will say that during one of our work sessions with the mayor and Daniel and Jenny, was it Reed?
Yeah.
So Reed is the...
Reed Bromley, who's our commercial real estate attorney.
So Reed...
Or real estate broker.
So Reed came to one of those meetings. He's the city real estate broker, right? He's trying to sell the land, right?
Yeah.
And he said he was fine with a particular approach, and he was definitely not in favor of second story. He said that'd be really hard to manage. But I share your concern. I just don't know if we know what the...
I think what it boils down to is the math, like you said. I mean, what's the magic number?
Having seen some of the other development, it goes in places where they loosen the reins. We don't want that. I mean, we want to make sure that we've reined it in enough that we're not going to get multifamily just thrown in there. And that's, if we don't put some kind of rules around, that's what will happen, because they're finding... They're trying to fit as many units on the smallest possible.
Sure, no, and I
all over Utah County.
I agree, and I think multifamily has been off the table.
Sure, but I mean,
and should stay off the table.
But I mean, I think you know, if we don't rein it in, then they will maximize everything they can out of that parcel.
No, but multifamily's has never been on the table for this summer.
Right,
so
I
think we need to keep that.
But townhomes and, you know, they, as many as they could put on there, they would.
No, I agree. But what if, you know, what if the magic number for it to work is, say, 60 units? I mean, could we live with 60 in order to get that done? But we've just said 50. Well, and that's my concern.
They
can request
a variance to the code, right? And we can go through the process.
It'd be a rezoning. You know?
Yeah, we'd have to rezone. We'd have to rezone. And which is, I'm just saying, it's hard to go. I don't know. I mean, I'm mainly I wanted this discussion to occur, so it's on the record that we've talked about this.
Right.
And
I agree with your sentiment. It's.
I mean, it needs to be talked about, because we're putting in density numbers that are somewhat arbitrary. I mean, I know there's been some look at surrounding communities and stuff, but I mean, it's a, so we need to, there needs to be a record that it was discussed. Otherwise it becomes an arbitrary and capricious.
Well, and it partly came from surveys.
Sure.
So we have survey data that backs up making this choice. And the arbitrary and capricious standard comes only when we're judging how we set conditions on a development. Whereas when we're writing code, you can say 50 is what we want.
No, I know, But I think we need to know why we're there. And like I said, I mean, so if it turns out that 60 is the magic number to make a development work.
The other big change in here is second story is the highest that can be built throughout the entire zone. Mm-hmm.
Which again, I think reflects what our community really wants.
Yeah. And what did the maximum height end up being?
35 feet.
Does it still say 35 feet occupied space?
It doesn't mention occupied.
What did you say? What is Walmart?
Yeah.
Walmart is.
Is it 42?
I wanted to say Walmart was like 32 feet.
Decorative stuff like the clock towers and such too, right?
That 35. It defines height.
I thought we had changed that the decorative stuff, there was a limitation that was not calculated into the height.
I think that's right.
Because that's the way we treat residential homes. You can have a chimney that's above.
Slope roof, midpoint of the rake.
Yeah. So you could have a chimney that's above the slope or above the rake, and it doesn't go against your height, your building height.
Did you do away with the concept of setback versus height?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think we have an occupied space clause.
Okay.
Here.
No, I think that's gone. That was confusing.
Was that?
Yeah.
Any other items on this document?
Oh, I do have one thing. This is actually something that our legal review brought up. And I'll see if I can search for it and find it, and I'll tell you which section. So this is in streetscapes. So that's 10.6A4C. It's right above the table that lists evergreen trees and deciduous trees and shrubs.
This is a new sentence? Is that right?
What's that?
Is this a new sentence? From
no.
Okay.
No. It's in the second paragraph above the table. It says at the very end, to help with screening and winter aesthetics, evergreen trees are required. Mm. It does not say how many.
Well, trees is more than one, so at least two is required, right? So.
And I didn't know if we had any history of when this was drafted, if this was intended like a significant number, like should we say 25%, 50% of the trees on the streetscape?
A lot of times you've probably seen it where they have a certain tree requirement every so often, every 60 feet, every 30 feet.
Yeah, so this says one tree for every 30 feet of street frontage.
And this is
trees along streets, so this is not trees elsewhere.
We don't put property. Evergreens along streets.
I was going to say, as I'm thinking about it, I don't know of a single evergreen down there.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. We should strike requirements that we don't use anymore.
We don't want evergreens along streets because they're very block views.
Yeah,
but we do want trees.
Yeah. But we do require trees. Yeah.
If I just strike that sentence, then I think we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, don't we want that sentence in there? We just don't want evergreen.
No, it talks about trees.
There's other places where trees are required.
Just that sentence, he says.
They're just saying during the winter time, all you've got is dead branches. Yeah.
In the general landscaping section for the entire site, it says evergreen trees are encouraged where practical for positive aesthetic effects in winter. Sure. It doesn't say anything about how many you have to have, just they're encouraged.
They're only required in the wintertime, so I wouldn't worry about it.
We'll only plant them in the winter.
That's great policy.
Okay, so that's gone. That was the only other issue on my docket.
I have one question kind of for clarification. Back to 10.6A5B, building height and size. Mm-hmm. 50,000 square feet. How big is Walmart?
Walmart's 126.
Okay, I'm just trying to...
50,000 is like a Best Buy. Or
50,000, imagine a Kohl's.
Not a footprint.
Oh, okay.
50,000 kills the idea of a theater. This is in the
retail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do a theater on 50,000 square feet. You wouldn't get three screens.
Not a viable theater. Not a megaplex. It would be something more like a Water Gardens.
And that is
Water Gardens got with six screens?
Water Garden's bigger than 50,000.
And it's bigger than 50,000.
So we can fix that by simply saying a variance may be approved for a movie theater.
Theaters aren't even in the...
Yeah, but I hate going language like that because then we end up...
Well, I thought they were.
Yeah, they are.
I don't want to be arbitrary.
Yeah, 7212, they are conditional use.
Okay.
Yeah, they are.
Same thing with ice skating and miniature golf and
that's true.
Bowling alley. You can get an ice skating rink in under 50,000.
I do like my screens big, so maybe we need a bigger footprint.
I I'm not necessarily advocating for a larger footprint. I'm just saying we are going to limit what can go in there to 50,000 because
you are
Walmart's 2.5 times
that. Yeah, and this is to match up with the survey, where that's what residents indicated that they wanted that restriction.
And keep in mind, if I read this correctly, this building size is total building area, which is all the floors. This is yes. not footprint.
So it'd be 25,000 a floor.
If it's a two-story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is an important clarification.
Yeah.
One that I think we've got it right here. Because you really are talking about the overall everything, not just the footprint.
So I wasn't even advocating for changing it. I'm just saying it will restrict what people
right,
want.
That's right. Yes.
It's a pretty strong restriction.
Does the fact that it's conditional use allow us to mediate that, or do we have to have that in the density area of the?
I think if you want to allow for a variance, you need to state it.
It says shall be, so that means there's nothing over 50,000.
It doesn't meet the elements of variance, the legal elements of a variance.
No, it doesn't. To get a variance, the state established 5 criteria that you have to meet, and it wouldn't meet those. So a variance isn't the way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
this would be a self-imposed, and it cannot be economically based, so this wouldn't qualify.
Are we ready for a motion here, or we want to talk about it some more?
What's the new? Do we have the new maps in here? Where's the new map? I made the last big motion.
Yeah, you can not look on this.
Where's the new map? Up there.
The new map?
It's in the. It's on like page 2 or 3.
Is it in the work
document? It's on page 2.
Page 2.
Right here. There is the bar.
And the boundary is defined.
I'm just comparing it to. I'm just comparing it to the previous one. So we've grown the mixed office use. How much, Chandler? Do you know?
Say that again. We've grown the mixed use.
As the mixed use?
No, the mixed use. The mixed use is.
You cut it off.
It's shrunk that little dog leg adjacent to the neighborhood.
But it didn't move the boundary.
No, didn't otherwise move the boundary.
No, but we did. What, were you going to incorporate the legal description in here?
It is
already.
Did I just not see that?
He's got the meets and bounds. I just off the top of my head. Underneath where that was.
Oh, there it is. Okay, it is there. Yeah. So what we did was where that dog leg was, we took it straight down to the R111,000 zone that's there. And took it over, but in order to alleviate those concerns, we had that 100-foot conditional use code.
So. Right, dog leg gone, 100 foot added.
That works.
Yep.
Any motions?
So 50,000 square feet anywhere in that retail zone. And what's in the mixed use is 25,000 total square feet, and that's all floors.
For any given building, yes.
Per building, they could have more than one building of that size, and if they can make it work.
I guess I'm doing my mansion somewhere else.
I will move that we recommend the proposed amendments as defined tonight to 10.6A design requirements for planned commercial development of the city's council.
You want to say it again, but use the nomenclature City Code Title 10, Chapter 6 related to planned commercial development right off the agenda. Makes sense.
No. Where are you reading?
Number five
on the agenda.
I'm looking at the agenda item. Sorry.
Yeah, on the memo, there's some language at the bottom of the memo.
Oh. You read that?
Yep.
I was reading a different one.
I apologize. I should take city staff's recommendation.
You can do either one. It's not going to make a difference. So
yeah.
You can do either
one. Why
don't
you just do what you like? I'm sorry.
That's okay. I want to get it right.
Okay. Go ahead. Do it again. I'm sorry.
Do it again. I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to 10.6A, design requirements for planned commercial development, with the amendments made this evening, the changes made this evening.
I second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Nay.
All right. Thank you. For the record, if you want, you can express your name for the record, or you can not if you want.
I feel like the limitations on size and building size need to be better thought out.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's arbitrary.
So the next item on the agenda is review recommendation on amendments to Title 10, Chapter 5, related to conditional use permits.
I know we did this last month, but there's one change I wanted to make before we took it to the City Council, and that was in 10.5.37E, the approval process. I met with the city's attorney, Chris Bramhall, who's in attendance at the last meeting, to try to discuss and come to terms with the issue of having so many items that were considered a conditional use that never come to the Planning Commission. So what he proposed was having multiple land use authorities and the litmus test that would determine where a conditional use needed to go would be determined upon whether it was an existing structure or a new structure. An existing structure would be done in-house, would be done as staff would approve. This would include the items like fences, hedges, home occupation businesses, anything that's not expanding an existing structure. Any new structure would need to come before the City Council or the City Planning Commission for a conditional use permit. These would be planned developments. This would be assisted living homes in residential zones. Those types of things. So that would alleviate our concern about let's make sure that we're following the code as it's written rather than what we're practicing right now. So it's cleaning that up.
Can you clarify that? Because you just said that converting a home to an assisted living facility would come before the Planning Commission, but I thought that was...
That's one I would think should.
Yeah.
Because
does that fall under the characteristic of a change to an existing...
Normally it does. There's multiple modifications made to the home. So in the case of the Osman facility, which I guess is Beacon Heights now, it was adjoining two homes. So in that case, I would suggest that staff take that one to the City Council. But a typical home occupation, if it's someone's salon in their basement.
Yeah, but the way it's worded right now is conditional use permit for use in a new or expanded structure and conditional use permit for use in an existing structure. It doesn't make any distinction between changing the use.
No, I guess that's right.
That was my comment as well.
Okay.
My little note. And my other comment is that, I mean, it says conditional use permit we could refer to all conditional use permits. I know it's just a moment ago you talked about trees and fences and things like that, but the way it's worded here in number one, I mean, it's just conditional use permit. It doesn't really talk about which ones would come before the city planning department, which ones wouldn't. So I don't know how we address that or define that, but...
I'm not understanding what you're saying. You're going to have to explain that again.
You just explained a moment ago that in number one talks about how if it's just an existing structure that's changing to the conditional use permit needs to change to somebody else, for example, that city planning department could handle that. Because mm-hmm. you'll be dealing with fences and...
Existing structures or sites.
Right.
Correct.
But the way it's worded, it says conditional use permits. It doesn't really clarify.
If somebody's applying for a conditional use permit for a home occupation or something with that involves an existing structure, that right. they're not changing the normal use of the primary use of the structure, or they're not changing, they're not expanding the structure, it would just stay in staff.
I think primary use is what I'm looking for there, because it's not in there.
Maybe we add that language, primary use, because in that case, that would change, it would incorporate the assisted living facility, where that would be the primary use is single family residential, and it's changing to assisted living. At that point, it's now the primary use is changing.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the language that fixes
that's
that.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
So if in that case, the primary use would change, even though the structure may not change, it would still come before. Now, the home occupation businesses, the Title III in the city's code outlines limitations on how big your business can be in your home. So it doesn't become the primary purpose of the home. So in that case, it would stay in-house and staff. Things like accessory dwelling units or accessory apartments would be done in-house in staff. If they met the building requirements and the zoning requirements, they met the requirements and we do the inspection and give them their permits, where it's not expanding the structure.
In that process, I had a comment here about public noticing.
Okay. Let's talk about this.
So that should be part of the process here, that the planning department shall approve it after public noticing or public comment.
How would we take public comment in a planning department approval?
I'll give you an example, like Osman changed a beacon.
Right, but in that case it would come before the planning commission.
Why? That use wouldn't change.
The primary use changed. Oh, no. In that case where the primary use doesn't change, yes, you're right, it would just be done in-house and staff.
Right. So neighborhood wouldn't have any, there's no public notice or...
No. The city's not required to do a public notice for any conditional use.
We do that as a service.
To be honest, I'll be quite frank, I don't think that the city should require of itself something that's more stringent than what the state requires of everyone. Mm-hmm. I think the city has used good judgment in the past when needing to issue a public hearing. I think that we've done a pretty good job of that, like Beacon Heights, for example.
So the Beacon Heights one came in front of this body, for example.
Right.
But why was that?
Because you were the land use authority
at that time. So we're talking about having things of that nature not come here in this example,
correct.
Right?
Correct. Yeah, that would be done in-house in staff.
Maybe we add language to the effect of if the use changes and/or the.
But the primary here. Hold on, though.
Or the ownership changes, or something.
Can't do that. Conditional uses run with the land, not with the owner.
Then why did we have? Why do we have to?
He got a condition. He didn't get a conditional use for the assisted living. He got a conditional use for the deck.
Okay. Got it.
So, because the conditional use is it's tied to the land, not who owns the land. Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you do need to add some language talking about if the primary use changes, right. Then that needs to go.
I think we can do that pretty quickly. Yeah. I think that's a simple sentence under
I think so too.
One.
So in 1A, it says the Planning Commission shall make a recommendation to City Council to approve. That's different than today, right?
It is.
We currently actually approve conditional uses, and this is saying we're no longer going to do that. We're going to just recommend. That's what it says, right?
That is what that says, yes.
And I personally would like the Planning Commission to keep. I know it's delegated authority, and the City Council can make up their own mind, but I would personally recommend that the Planning Commission continue to approve conditional use permits. That's just my opinion. Versus just recommending to the City Council to approve.
Well, for right now, I think maybe that you're right. I think we do need to change that to say the Planning Commission shall review each application and approve, not approve, approve, whatever, to be in compliance with what the code says right now. I think you're right. This code is taken from Saratoga Springs.
The City Council can take
but away then, the, but then the City Council, I was going to say the City Council, because that's Title IX, 9C, I think, B or C. The City Council can then say, you know what? we want to make sure that we have a say in those as well. So they could just as easily say,
right,
the city council or the planning commission will recommend conditional uses to the city council. So that is something that could change. But I agree with you. I think that that should be worded differently to reflect what current code is.
So I would suggest changing and make a recommendation to approve, my opinion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, just
I think just keep it now. Just each application and approve.
Yeah, just each application. Make a recommendation to city council.
So what if it said the planning commission shall review each application and approve with conditions or deny the application?
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
And so then you would say in B that the planning commission is the land use authority?
Yes.
That's how it currently is.
That's how it currently states. So if the city council feels that that needs to change, that's up to the city council.
That's an interesting discussion to have.
Yeah. Maybe we should do some surveys on performance of planning commission on conditional use permits. The city survey says. Okay. I'm down to public hearing with my comments. Okay. Anybody else have anything before that?
Where did you put the primary use, change in primary use?
Under one.
Just in that first paragraph?
Sorry. Where it says conditional use for, it'll be say conditional use permit for a use in a new or expanded structure or site, or in the event that a primary use changes, something to that effect.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can we go back to just the discussion we just had? When planning commission, and I don't want to lose any of the authority we have right now, because we have a lot of responsibility and we don't mind carrying the ball. Planning commission, though, I believe, is somewhat more restricted than is city council in reviewing these applications in terms of what we can review these applications against. And so we make, you know, we approve a condition or deny applications, I think, based on a narrower scope.
But that's established in G.
And I'm okay. I'm not questioning that. Okay, what I'm suggesting is I'm wondering if, for the sake of our community, if it shouldn't, if these conditional uses shouldn't also go before a body that has broader discretion than the planning commission does. And here's why I'm saying this. We've been in situations where we can only administer the code. We mm-hmm. have to render decisions based on how the code is written. City council can, because they're elected officials, I believe, have broader discretion than the commission does, and there's an opportunity there. If we have had to approve a development because it's in compliance with the narrower scope that we're allowed to consider, it can go behind. I'm not wording this very well because I'm trying to form it.
No, I see what you're saying.
It's almost a protection to put it in front of council because they have broader discretion to say, we understand why.
And I'm not sure that they do.
And maybe they don't.
Well, to a certain extent, the city council has. I agree with what you're saying, is that the planning commission is very. Their approvals or denials are supposed to be based in code, based in land use code, whether it's state or city. The city council takes into account some other things. I think they can take more into account public input. Now, I don't think that the primary condition for approval or denial can be public comment, but they can take that and work with that. But they're still bound by the code as well.
Is it a protection?
See, I think there's really only one difference, which is that you guys are appointed and we're elected. Yeah. And having sat in both seats, I felt more heat when I was elected because people say, I voted for you. You better not do that.
Right. Yeah. But they still are. They're still responsible to uphold the code as well. They don't get a turn up. I don't see that. They need to make sure that they're seeing the code and they're following the code as well.
I mean, if they don't follow the code, they'll just somehow just appeal it off to the
right.
Board of Adjustments.
But don't they also have to take into consideration, okay, what their interpretation was, does this meet the general plan? And we couldn't do that because we...
No, I thought you...
No, you do.
Okay.
You do.
I don't see any differences. I've read planning books that the ULCT puts out. I don't see any difference in your role or our role in terms of interpreting code or making judgments as to how it fits with the general plan. It really comes down to where should that authority rest? And I think in bigger cities, they often delegate a lot of it to the planning commission because they have other stuff they need to do in terms of legislative responsibilities. And in cities of our size, I've seen it go both ways, that sometimes the planning commission can do it and sometimes the city council can do it.
And to your comment, is it safer or not safer for the city to have these decisions made by people that don't have the pressure, the political pressure of, I'm running for election, and all right, I voted for you, you better do this for me. It's almost like we're like, you know, live judges, if you will. We don't have the pressure of having been elected. We can just dig ourselves into the code and not worry about, is that a protection for the city versus decisions that may be impacted and influenced more by politics? So
it's absolutely. Conventional wisdom is that politics doesn't factor into someone who's not elected.
Well, and then, but I think if we jump to G, there's the standards for granting a conditional use. Sort of, as I see it, these are the guidelines we have to follow. We have to look through yes, 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 or no.
And right. But these are the standards, and so I think if your conditions are based in these standards, then you're fine. I mean,
honestly, I think my primary concern is that we have a history in the city of the city council having the final say on new developments that come in. That's really where I think people have the most heartburn, is approving a new development. And for years and years, it's gone through the planning commission to make a recommendation, and then the city council decides the final say. And that's because we had everything listed as a conditional use for so long, and we're going to change that the way it should be changed. But because of that history, people, for better or for worse, have not necessarily paid too close of attention to what the Planning Commission does when it comes to the City Council. And then you hear the uproar, right, and people get involved and weigh in and not. And so if we do change it to say that from now on out, the Planning Commission is going to have that final say, boy, we better educate residents.
Well,
to
that's
know
how it is.
To come see you guys.
I mean, what's
the conditional use? That's the way it's been.
For conditional use permits for existing uses, it's been that way. But for new uses, every time a building's been approved, it comes to the City Council because it's a planned commercial development, right? Right. Planned commercial developments, the City Council has been the land use authority.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I guess I didn't. I missed that distinction. That's changing.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that needs to change or not. I don't.
Well, my opinion is we continue to.
So maybe that's where you make the distinction, is that for the planned commercial developments, the city council is the land use authority, and for
right.
You know, if somebody's building a new house or a subdivision, you know, so the planning commission handles those issues.
So let me go with that for a second. And say there's a subdivision going in, and it goes through the preliminary phase and it goes through the final phase, and both planning commission, sorry, it goes through the preliminary phase in city council and planning commission, and then in the final phase. Are you saying that you'd be okay as a city council member with the planning commission making their final approval, granting the conditional use permit, and it not going to the city council?
Has the city council typically approved the residential developments as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all developments have gone through a preliminary final in both the planning commission and the city council.
Yeah.
So let me just say new uses
the problem stems from the approval process. If you go in Title 11, it's 2 or 3C, I don't know. There's an approval process there, and it outlines that a development application goes from a concept plan where the city council, or sorry, the planning commission approves it, then to a preliminary plan where this planning commission makes recommendation, city council makes approval, final, planning commission makes recommendation, city council makes approvals.
And that process can continue here, right? I mean, we don't have to change that process.
Not the way it's worded right now.
There would just need to be the designation that the planning commission, during their final approval, is granting the conditional use permit for that application. Or it could even be it may even be during the preliminary phase, because that's when the vesting occurs. I mean, because the final approval really is just making sure that it's the little details, making sure you didn't lose anything. The preliminary is where the meat and potatoes is in a development. That's why that process takes a lot of time, because that's where your studies come in, and that's where you're really looking at the traffic counts, you're looking at parking, you're looking at landscaping. Final, everything's pretty much wrapped up. Right? Everything's pretty much wrapped up and final. So,
I guess I would say that if it is the same, then I don't mind Karen Ball. I don't mind the commission being the land use authority and making these decisions. I don't mind carrying that. I thought there was an advantage to allowing it to go also before City Council from a discretion standpoint, but if there's not, then...
I see what you're saying, though.
I don't mind us making that decision and carrying the heat, as you say, for making those decisions. I want to make sure that the community has the broadest discretion possible. If that's through us and we're that vehicle, that's fine. That's great.
I think it's just a matter of, do you want elected officials doing it or appointed officials? Because we're all bound by the same code. That's what it boils down to.
But then maybe the approval process.
I guess the other thing in favor of doing it with two steps is that the public gets two chances at public input, two chances to catch anything that one of us missed in either body.
Right.
So there's more scrutiny that way.
Some instances, I would say, it needs to go before both bodies, like a subdivision. I see the wisdom in that. Something like an assisted living facility, I think, could just come to this body and be fine. I see both sides of this.
But so you're, I mean, you're either looking at like new uses. New uses going
two-step.
Right.
And changes to existing uses, or changes to the primary use, going one step. But
I like the preliminary final process we have now for these.
So maybe in that project, maybe in that approval process, maybe the code needs to change in the approval process about when the CUP is issued. Because it could still be this code, but then in the approval process, it's outlined that during the final approval from the Planning Commission or the final recommendation from the Planning Commission shall issue a CUP for when necessary. And it's designated at that point that that's when that happens.
I like the concept of new going two-step and bonds called renewals, kind of like it's almost like you're renewing or extending it from another person going through the planning commission.
Well, now we've got the third step, the third one, which is like if you've got change in ownership or whatever, then that should just go through staff because that's that use stays with the lands. Or you're just changing the name on the permit.
Change your primary use.
So you don't have any use changes for that.
What's that?
You don't even need a new permit for that. It runs with the land.
Yeah.
So they don't need stuff.
Okay. But there would be things like fences where...
Yeah, where staff... It doesn't need to come to planning.
Do that
City
if
Council.
It's just an addition to an existing use. Does it change the fundamental use of the property?
Well, fences and landscaping, all those, that's just code enforcement.
I'm sorry, now I don't understand what you're saying.
Did you fall asleep for a minute?
No, I was listening, and I you lost me on the new.
I didn't say new. I was just saying we're talking about, you know, what comes to Planning Commission, what goes to City Council, but there's also the what just goes to staff.
Right now, as it's written, it's existing.
And I think everyone's okay with that.
Right.
Okay.
So if the structure's there, it's not changing. Primary use isn't changing. It's not expanding, and the site's not changing. It just stays in-house and staff, and we take care of it.
Good. Okay.
If it's a new structure, let's say somebody wants to put in a little market in a residential neighborhood, that would obviously come to this body. Now, does this scenario play out where it goes to the City Council as well?
That's a question. I think we're saying no. What we're saying is the only thing that goes on to...
That's how I'm reading this right now. Now, you lost me with... Because new is also a subdivision. That's new. multiple new structures, and that one outrides the codes written right now, it does go to the city council.
Which is okay.
Yeah, I think we're
after preliminary from planning commission, right?
Right.
And final.
Yeah.
But at what point is the CUP granted?
Has to be granted by the land use authority, right? Which would be city council in that instance.
Well, it's city is council it? Can decide if they want to do that themselves or delegate it to us. And so let them decide.
I mean, the code states that the planning commission has been delegated with the authority to grant CUPs.
CUPs under which conditions?
There aren't any conditions listed. It just says the planning commission is delegated the. Here, I'll read it for you.
We're 2 seconds.
Where are we looking?
It's under 9. Go to 9B. Nine one B five G matters delegated here decide any matters that the city council designates, including the approval or denial of, or recommendations to approve or deny conditional use permits. That's.
I think the council should weigh in on our on this discussion, and we'll provide our recommendation what we think should happen, and they will as they should.
They get to choose. They get to choose.
They get to choose.
This is an invigorating discussion, by the way.
I'll guarantee you, as a historian of the Planning Commission, that there has been a definite shift from, over the last 10 or 11 years from moving the authority to the council. And there is an attitude in the city that says, why the hell bother with it? It's going to be changed in the council level. And I'm just pointing that out as a historian.
Right.
I relate my personal belief then, based on having both kinds of experiences, is that I think that the council should recognize the strength of the commission and their experience and their intimate experience with the code, and allow them. Delegate to them preliminary approval. They should never go to the council. You have developed a reputation from the city of being Stanford, a perfect Stanford. And I guarantee you that's the attitude. That shouldn't be that way. There was a point when the council recognized the importance of the commission, but over the last number of years, and there are other commissioners who have the same opinion, the authority of the planning commission has been diminished to where it's really impotent. I'm sorry to say that. Part of why I left the commission after so many years was that I just couldn't deal with that change, the shift. We do have, and we did then in the early days, have a certified planning planner as a consultant to the planning commission, and he was very actively involved. He did retire. At that point, we had an educated, a degreed city planner join the staff who was very, very competent and adequate. I have a lot of heartburn from the attitude of the council. I can say that freely because there's no replication. To me, they're not going to burn a cross in my front lawn because they don't have a front lawn. That's my opinion. Some of you may share that opinion privately. You should do what the commission does. What the state requires of the council, the commission, and what our city council has generously allocated.
I don't think the city council is too interested in extending the meeting times by too much already and adding additional workload. They can discuss that internally. But again, I
going back to the earlier clause, I suggest that we maintain the conditional use permit authority, and that's going to be our recommendation and our motion, hopefully, in my opinion. Can we go on to section the G?
Mm-hmm.
So in F, it says that the applicant has demonstrated that there's sufficient utility capacity and emergency vehicle access. And I was thinking that maybe the city should determine if there's adequate utility capacity and emergency vehicle access instead of the applicant determining that. Or at least have the city determine the city-owned or city-operated utilities capacity.
Chairman?
Right now it's up to the applicant.
Maybe yes. The applicant could demonstrate that they have that. Put the burden of proof on them to come before and show that it's there, then the city doesn't have that.
Well, keep in mind, in both of these instances, the city engineer and the fire chief are going to review the plat. The city engineer is going to look at this and say, okay, you have X amount of units. Take sanitary sewer, for example. It flows in this direction, and I know for a fact that the capacity in this line is already met. We can't flow this way. This is exactly what happened with Rosegate. They wanted to flow out their sewer on 4600. As a staff, we looked at that and said, no, you've got to have your flows go out to 4800. 4600 is full. We don't have enough capacity there. In this instance as well, Fire Chief Chief Freeman and Councilmember Ben Bailey looked at that and said, okay, well, from a public safety standpoint, we need access points here and here. So staff is actively involved in those discussions, but the developer is the one that needs to make the initial proposal. So
right.
that one does already go both ways.
So we should, let's put it both ways in the language then. I mean, this is part of the approval process, right? And let's say there's a difference of opinion between the applicant and the city on utility.
But then they haven't demonstrated that.
Then they haven't demonstrated.
The word demonstrate, I think, means that they've got to prove to us that that's.
Yeah. You have a difference of opinion, right? They hire their own consultant. Consultant says, "Oh, you guys have plenty of water."
Well, no,
you can't deny me for that reason.
No, but if they come and they say, if they come, like when they come and they propose it, and the city engineer says we don't have sufficient sewer for that proposal, then we say, "No, you haven't demonstrated."
So then they come back with a new plan that takes those recommendations in. That's what happened. That's in that case. So.
That's how it's been in the past.
Yeah.
Right. So if the city's involved, we should say they're involved here.
But we're involved in every single one of these steps.
It's not, well, if you're not listed here, it's not part of the standards for.
No, it is, though. In the approval process, staff reviews the application and the documents pertaining to the application.
I mean, I'm the one that apparently has this concern.
So yeah, and I think the word demonstrated satisfies me because they've got to demonstrate that's. Yeah. That's sufficient capacity. We're the ones that decide whether that they've demonstrated that sufficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the land use.
It says the applicant has demonstrated. We don't demonstrate. We don't do anything there, right?
Well, they have. But who are they demonstrating to?
To us. They just come and say, "I demonstrate to you we have enough water. My consultant says we do."
Right, and that's why I'm here. If they haven't, I say no, they haven't. I mean, I hate to break it down to such simple terms, but I mean that's. That's how it is. I mean, we require there's like for utility capacity, for example, water shares. That's calculated on that's not an arbitrary number. That's based on lots and size of the project and what the project is. In the case of commercial uses, emergency vehicle access. They have specific requirements that they will say, okay, well, our fire trucks are X feet wide, so your driving lanes need to be this much wider than that. Yeah. So it is a very tangible number. It's not a there's not an arbitrary element there.
All right, I'm the only one that seems to be concerned about that. So move on. You had a comment, Jeff, after that, I think. Number two, you had a comment there.
I thought that two read correctly without the insertion of the word not. That's all I was suggesting. Proposed conditional use shall be considered as detrimental if the proposed conditional use will cause unreasonable risk to the safety of persons.
Mm-hmm. I struck the word not as well because actually what you're saying there is that we won't do our job, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think the word not has to come out to make that make sense.
Under two?
Yeah.
Two, yeah. Shall be considered as detrimental or injurious.
Mm-hmm. We don't want to say not.
Instead of shall not be considered detrimental.
The word not was inserted, and I'm suggesting that it doesn't need to be inserted.
Yeah, it's not there in your draft.
I was going to say, I am not seeing this.
Well, not's on ours.
We can all see it.
David recommended it be added, and then Jeff pointed out, but no, that's not correct.
Okay, I'm looking at this paper, and I'm scouring it, not so seeing it.
Stands,
it. So
stands as written.
Is it really that late?
I was going to say, it's good.
So enough. We're, okay, so that's my language I put in there we're all concerned about?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I don't know why I did that. Any other comments on this document? I see Chairman Dodge had something in
it. It's minor. It says decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission. We're not the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Planning Commission.
Where are you looking?
10536H appeals of decisions. That's just nomenclature.
Last phrase.
Planning
got it. And zoning.
Okay, we'll
it
fix
probably
that.
Got pulled from somewhere else.
And then under revocation, I'll just keep going real quick. Yeah, it mentions the Community Development Division. And the Code Enforcement Community Development Division.
So,
that should be Code Enforcement Department, I think.
Something, yeah. Something that actually exists. You know, see where I am, Chandler?
10536J.
What's the proper city department names there for Code Enforcement and Community Development?
I just put Planning Department.
That's fine, yeah.
Because Planning Department is Code Enforcement's under Planning Department.
That works. It was the same thing in the very last 10536N reporting requirements, same deal.
Okay. Any other comments on this document?
The very last sentence, what was that?
What's that about?
Reporting requirements.
Is that the
group quarters?
Title 1200?
Yeah, just kind of thrown in there. Very
1200,
very
that was the, with the land use code numbers, that was these types of homes. We just felt like maybe they should be demonstrating that they haven't exceeded the capacity that was granted to them. That was the thought process there.
So that is the group underneath. That's the owner or occupant that we are saying under 10536N needs to report.
Right. So it'd be like assisted living.
Needs an annual report. I just think that 1200.
It should probably be a range.
What's that?
Should probably be a range, if anything.
I don't know that it's a range, but it should say.
There's a table. Whatever's
from the land use.
Land use code 1200. Document.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, whatever we name that table, isn't that, didn't that table get a name?
It's going to.
So whatever the name is,
add that into the table. So that's a good idea.
Okay.
I wasn't sure what 1200 meant.
And 1200.
I didn't know we had 1200 group quarters in the city.
Is group quarters in that table? I don't know what it is.
No, it's not in that table, but it's in the land use code numbers document, which is a separate document.
So where does the land use document reside in all this?
That's in the general plan.
General plan.
Okay, so we didn't talk about it. We talked about general plan. So
that was the land use element of the general plan.
Yeah. Are you talking about the land use code numbers?
The land use code numbers document.
It probably just has to be. It probably just have to be a standalone document available at the from the city's website. Because to print it out and put it in code is kind of ridiculous.
That's real fun.
Not if we delete everything I wanted to delete.
Oh, my groan.
It's 65.
I enjoyed doing that, and then I realized there was that sentence in there that didn't need it. So, okay. I would love to hear a motion, if anybody would like to make one, unless they still have other things they would talk about.
So, on the conditional use thing, where did we end up? Conditional use process.
The Planning Commission will not recommend, but will approve conditional use.
That's what I have.
Right now it says recommend.
For all projects.
When I popped open the code book, for the subdivision approval process, it does dictate that the
the applicant goes back and forth between Planning Commission and City Council a number of times. So what I was thinking was adding language in the application process about when the conditional use permit is granted, whether it's in the Planning Commission in the preliminary phase or the Planning Commission in the final phase or City Council in either one. That way there's not a... Because those are the ones that go before the City Council. Those are the ones we were talking about, where it's a giant subdivision and the City Council is going to have a say in it as well. If it's something that's smaller, that's not a subdivision process, they're going to be coming just before the Planning Commission. So that was something I was thinking about.
So then 9.1b.5g needs to be changed as well.
Yeah, it would. And that could be done in the City Council. It wouldn't need to come before this body.
Right.
9.1g.5.
9.1b.
9.1b.5.
Dash 5, section G, matters delegated. Right. Because right now it says...
But I don't know that that necessarily would change, because it says may approve or make recommendation.
Include the approval or denial. Oh, right, it does say or recommend.
So that, I don't know that that would need to change, because right. It could in some cases be an approval, and in some cases could be a recommendation based on what the application is.
I read it too quickly earlier.
So that would be that distinction. If it's a subdivision, then it goes to the City Council for approval. If it's just a change in use for a single unit, comes before the Planning Commission.
Okay.
You want me for the record to, I found a few places in the code we would need to tweak if we adopt this as code.
Please tell me.
References to the guidelines and...
Wait.
So, for example, section 31A...
Right.
One...
Daniel and I met and...
You guys got
that? We're aware of those. If they're not in Title 10, they don't need to come to the Planning Commission. So...
Yeah, I'm just talking about if we adopt...
10.6a.
Yeah, if we actually, because we are recommending adoption of Title 10, there's actually existing code that needs to come out that references the old guidelines for the design and review of planned commercial development projects. It's in the code.
Right.
My question is, do you want me to cite for the record where those are, or?
You can. I'm aware of where those are, but you can cite them.
Because you're looking, probably should have been part of our earlier recommendation, right? On our Title 10?
It can be, but I mean, it's already something that's in the hopper. So,
okay, we met. In the hopper, I'm not going to concern myself.
We met. Daniel and I went through the code and found all those references and that need to change.
Okay.
So, but that's a good catch.
So, I'll make a motion.
We kind of went back to the design guidelines. Is there anything else on the conditional use that we have any concerns on?
Mm-hmm. You want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we recommend the amendments to title, let's see, make sure I'm right.
It's 10.5.37, ignore that 36.
Yeah, I'm looking at our agenda. Maybe I should be looking at the
amendments. Should be 10.5.36, 37, I believe.
Yeah. So I make a motion that we recommend proposed code 10.5.36 regarding conditional use permits to the City Council for approval and adoption with the changes discussed this evening.
Okay. Second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. All right.
Before you go on to the next item, I'd like to thank you for being so gracious and not hammering me or gaveling me out of here. But you've done wore me out. I got it.
Well, we're almost done. You can stick it out to the end, but that's up
not
to you.
A chance.
Thanks for coming.
Good to see you. Give me a call if that needs any work.
I'll let you know tomorrow.
Okay.
The next item is discussion on Land Use Academy of Utah, and just a little explanation here for members that weren't at the last meeting. My thought process here is that we would each take a turn finding something on that website for Land Use Academy and bringing it to the body and teaching the body about it or explaining it. Or
so we're each assigned a month? Is it
each month we'll spend, and we're talking like 5-10 minutes, we're talking just short.
Yeah, one person per month. So
yeah. Now, I assigned myself this month, but I would entertain a motion to table it, given the hour.
Yeah, we get 20 minutes.
Okay.
Just kidding.
So I have a motion to table discussion or item number.
I move we table item 8 on the schedule items until next month.
My second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are they opposed? All right. So the next one is number 9, committee assignments and reports. And just an observation.
We need to make those.
Huh? What's that?
Do I need to make those?
Make what?
Assignments. Committee assignments.
Yeah. I'm reporting. We have no committee assignments, but I have a report. So Dollar Tree hasn't met all three of their conditional uses yet from our last meeting. They still have this protruding cable on the east side of the building that
I spoke with them about that. They're doing something with that. It's on their list.
Okay.
About all three items.
All right. Just observation. The gates are there, but they still have this wire that's protruding. I don't know what it is.
What are they doing about the parking?
The motion that we made was that they would ensure that nobody parked there. We didn't define how they do that. But
I have never seen anybody park there.
So I think the intent was that they would, you know, mark it in some manner, which hasn't occurred. But on the other hand,
yeah,
our official motion just said that they would ensure that nobody parked there.
Shoot.
So they may be meeting that particular intent.
But the wire's still there.
Yeah. So the other just report is Walmart seems to be taking advantage of their conditional use situation, and their nursery, they have their nursery stuff outside, which I believe is against their conditional use all along, and they don't seem to use their bay doors ever to invite people into the nursery. If you look at Walmart yesterday, if you've even seen that, they've taken over a lot of the south parking lot. And Chandler, you said you went down there.
Placed a call to the Walmart, left a message with Mike. Mike Fenfeld is the owner manager, the manager of the Walmart.
Right.
I've yet to hear back from him about this issue as well as their stamped concrete.
So they didn't ask the city for a temporary permit or anything like that. Or
no. So this is something that we're already working internally with between the city and Walmart, I've spoken with our code enforcement officer about it as well. So in this case, it would need to go to the city council for approval or for a conditional, or not even a conditional use, just for an approval from the city council to store goods up.
Right.
What's going on with the stamped concrete? They're going to rip it out?
It shakes everybody's drinks.
Are they going to rip it out?
Breaks their eggs. They'd like to. The conversation I had with them was they'd like to, and they'd like the city to pay for it or help pay for it, and I wasn't at liberty to say one way or another on that, but
just because we made them put it in doesn't mean we have to take it out.
It's part of their landscaping. When they got their original approvals,
I know.
So they would need to do something there, other than just a sidewalk. I've yet to have my call come back, and I've gone down to the store before and been unable to contact them. So I've worked on it a couple of times.
But like when Arts came in, it was when they said we're going to do stamp colored concrete. We said colored's fine. Don't stamp it.
Because everybody saw what happened to stamp.
I know, but that's why I'm saying. It seems like we could work with Walmart that way as well, and just say color.
There's options that they can pursue. Yeah. I just want them to get back to me.
Sounds like a trip to Arkansas on some order. All right. I have a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Thanks for the late hour. Sorry, we had a lot to dig through there. Our last meeting was long. Hopefully, we'll get to the